In association with NintendoWorldReport.com, Child's Play, Charity.org, and listeners just like you, you're listening to Part 3 of the 2012 NWR Live Telethon. In this final release, you'll be hearing Nintendo Free Radio's version of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, Player One Podcast, Chris Johnston, and Phil Theobald. Then, Johnny comes back on the air for a 3DS report card. And finally, we wrap things up with some good old-fashioned shenanigans, featuring the return of the furious, fantastic, and funky fresh rhymes of John Lindemann. Before we begin, I should note that the Nintendo Free Radio crew was experiencing some technical difficulties, so we'll be joining them about a quarter way into their segment. That being said, it was an awesome show, and I'm sure you'll enjoy listening to it just as much as we enjoyed recording it. That's enough out of me. Let's get on to the show.
Okay, so the first segment didn't go too well, but again, I'll reiterate here. We do need a contestant for the next game. Send your answers to Carl.Castaneda on Skype with the answer to the question, a former Capcom employee got Twitter death threats after blank was announced as Wii exclusive. You're sending in what goes in the blank. All right, send that to Carl. First person to get it right, we'll get the chance to play the next round. And well, while we're getting that situated, do you have some questions from the year Nintendo? Nate, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. So at New York Comic Con, what did Nintendo assault their fans with?
Oh God. I don't know. Can you give me a hint?
It comes out tomorrow.
Comes out tomorrow. I don't know. What's today?
Have you been drinking?
It feels like it.
Today is the RFN Telethon day.
Yeah, that's probably why.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there is a rather important game coming out tomorrow for the 3DS.
That would be Paper Mario.
Yeah. Yeah, so they got attacked with stickers from Paper Mario. All right. So, yeah, they're attacking their fans with sticking giant stickers onto people and thinking that was a good way to get the hype up for Paper Mario.
Is it not? I mean,
I like getting stuck with stickers, and these were like man-sized stickers too. They were huge. If you didn't see the pictures,
yes, yeah. You'll block out the sun with those.
Now, did they have man beams though? That's the big question.
That's how you got them off, right?
Yeah. And moving on, Austin, question for you here. When they had the zombies come in to show off Miiverse, what other feature did they show with an old guy and a younger guy?
I think you already answered this question. This was the Miiverse one, wasn't it?
Well, this was part of Miiverse.
Not specifically.
They showed up with an old guy and a young guy.
This was the message board feature. Where you ask questions to the internet.
Well, they had that, but there was one other feature that they showed with Iwata and Reggie at the Nintendo Direct.
It has to do with your face.
Don't. Oh, just taking a picture of your face, putting it on your me?
Other people's faces.
It was video chat. Showing up. So now we get even more fun with Fox News claiming that the Wii U is a way of meeting that the Wii U is going to be a way to attract predators.
I'm
on the air. Hi.
Hello there.
Hello, Eloyd. Is it?
Yeah.
All right, Eloyd. Where are you from?
Los Angeles, California.
Yeah.
Los Angeles, California.
Mm-hmm.
Just like I live in Atlanta from the last guy.
Yeah. My nerdy sister lives in Los Angeles, California.
What?
All right. So the game that you're gonna play the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Basically, we're gonna give in this case. Well, Steven, what's the category for this one?
Category for this one is DSiWare.
Yeah. Yes, with the eShop going crazy this year, DSiWare is obviously starting to fall by the wayside. But you know, we can always take a look back and remember it, quote-unquote, fondly. So I'm going to send, right now, I'm sending messages to the other three panelists with a description of what could be a DSiWare game. And what you're going to do is I'll have them read them off, and then your job is to tell us which one of them is actually the real game. If you get it right, you win a prize and if you get it right, you'll win a prize from one of the ones we have in the chat. So, all right.
Okay.
So I've sent one off to Austin. So, Austin, if you want to read that one that I just sent you.
All right. Do you want it with or without Virtue's Last Rewards cat puns?
Without.
Ah, oh, shoot. Okay. Techno Kitten Adventure sees you become a cat fueled by hopes and dreams. Help the cats navigate through fantastical worlds of dance music. Sounds like my kind of game. This side-scroller gained a cult following through its quirky design and simple music. Now upgraded and expanded, the game is packed with new levels, playable kittens, and techno songs. Use Nintendo Wi-Fi connection to upload your scores to online leaderboards, unlock achievements, and collect the greatest trophy of all, love.
Yeah, so that Techno Kitten Adventure, interesting game, could be on DSiWare, but we'll find out. With the next game, Nate, you've got one there?
Okay, in Just Sing National Anthems, you stand on the world's grandest stage, tasked with performing the national anthems of the greatest countries on Earth. Use the dual screens of your DSi to view the lyrics to the Star Spangled Banner and the DS microphone to bust out your finest rendition of Japan's Kimigayo. Australia, Argentina, and Brazil are also represented, with the promise of future countries like our beloved Canada to follow.
All right, then.
All right, and if my Skype copy and paste would work. Got one more possible game here with Chris Johnston. He's got his game, Chris. What game could be on DSiWare?
All right. Who's That Flying is a wildly different kind of shooter. In it, you are the mysterious and powerful creature known only as the Guardian of Earth. Your steely eye and hyper-powered laser arm have kept the citizens of Earth safe for generations, as well as proving a hit with the ladies. Oh, yeah. It's a side-scrolling shooter meets tower defense with courtroom drama and intrigue doused in sheer awesomeness and then set on fire.
All right, so there's your three choices there, Eloyd. From Austin Parkin, Techno Kitten Adventure, a game that crosses the internet's two great obsessions, techno music and cats. From Nate Andrews, a national anthem karaoke game. Or from Chris Johnston, a game that sounds like Phoenix Wright gone horribly, horribly awry. Which one of those is actually a DSiWare game?
Okay, well, unfortunately, I didn't have a DSi, so I'm going to have to guess here. I don't think the microphone's good enough for any singing game, so I'm going to count that out. So I guess I'll guess the Techno Kitten game.
Okay, well, so you're going with Techno Kitten game. Well, we do actually have we actually went back through the NWR archives and found the Nintendo press release from the day the actual game came out. Steven, could you read that line, please?
It is the greatest sporting event of 2010. The World Cup. All eyes are on South Africa, and all ears are on you in the karaoke game of the year. Enter the hallowed turf and display your talent by singing a selection of national anthems.
Aha.
Yeah, so it was Nate Andrews' answer of the national anthem karaoke game. That is actually a DSiWare game.
Wow. Right?
I didn't
Clearly
have to
it's
today.
Gone platinum.
Yeah. I think I heard that one. I actually listened to a Giant Bomb archive the other night.
Hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, sorry we couldn't get a prize for you, but thanks very much for playing, Eloyd, and enjoy the rest of the year. Enjoy the rest of the show as much as you can.
Oh, I will.
And the year.
Yes, and the
I
year.
I don't know about the rest of the year.
Have any of you actually played Techno Kitten Adventure? You can get it on Windows Phone.
No. Techno Kitten Adventure is actually a Windows Phone 7 game, and Who's That Flying is actually a PSP Mini.
And
then
an iPhone
you can get
game.
Steam also.
Yeah. All right. So let's now it's time for the game where we invite extraordinary people to talk about things that are very ordinary. Our guest this week is currently a host of With the CJ on the Player One podcast. He's also a writer for Nintendo Power, just turned in his last review this past Friday, and also written in the past for EGM, EGM2, Game Now, and basically every other magazine that Ziff Davis has ever had. So our guest for Not My Job is Mr. Phil Theobald.
And just to give a fair warning, all three of us from NFR all have copies of Mario on our 3DS standing by.
All right, just trying to get him added in here. Yeah, so...
Where did anything we need to know about Phil if he comes on here, Chris?
Well, apparently that he's not here. Let's see.
Hello, I'm back.
Yeah. So basically, once we get Phil on here, we'll ask him. I've got a couple of questions for him, and we'll ask some. And we have some questions about his line of work.
I can just answer for Phil, since he's not here. I can pretend to be short and extreme.
And you like Skylanders and.
No! Do not do this. This man does not represent me.
There we go, Phil.
Not let him.
Will the real Phil Theobald please stand up?
Oh my goodness! I'm Phil Theobald. Wait, I'm the real Phil. All the other Phils are just imitating. So
you may not be able to see him stand up because Phil. He's so short.
He stand up,
he's but of course,
EJ.
Of course,
bitchy when he's not on his own podcast. Gosh, yes. You know, for the record, I will say that I actually reviewed Just Sing National Anthems for Nintendo Power.
How was Just Sing anyway?
Just Sing National Anthem. It was not very good.
But you know the national anthems now of several nations.
If you need me to bust out some of Canada, yes, I am ready.
What about Kim Ga Yo?
Yeah, I got that one down too. Kim Ga Yo, check it out. Hey, it's Finn. What's up, Finn?
He wanted to see you.
Oh, hi, oh, wow. Finn.
Now we're getting to the part of this that Mark McDonald prophesized in the last segment.
When my kid comes on the air?
he's having
a fussy day.
He sure is.
Dude's teething. See, look at this. See, your $3,000 not only got you an appearance by CJ and me, but also my wife and son. Hi, buddy.
It's pretty good.
Hey, buddy. You didn't know this, but my wife and son also showed up at one point too.
Oh, I think I heard them. Yes.
Yeah.
I was gonna say that wasn't my daughter. But somebody else.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
See, we're doing it for the kids, bringing in the family, folks.
Right.
Now, see, this is the part for child's
play. Yeah.
I'm looking at the schedule of who is on the show today, and part of me is thinking that, oh wow, you know, CJ and myself, we get to come on at the $3,000 mark. People have to donate $3,000 in order to hear our stupid banter, and you know, that's like, wow, is that what I'm worth? $3,000 to the internet. But then I'm also, because I'm looking and it's like, oh, wow, so that means I'm worth more than the wonderful folks at 8-4 Play and the wonderful folks, the Giant Bombers and that sort of thing and the Weekend Confirms and whatnot.
You're bigger than Halo, bigger than David Ellis.
That's just it. But then I'm wondering, is it because I'm worth that much or is it because we need to put the talented people on first? To get more money. And so I'm...
I think that's what it is.
Like, CJ and I, are we, like, the last skits, like, during the last half hour of Saturday Night Live, where it's the crappy stuff that they know no one's really watching at this point?
Yes.
So, I don't know. But thank you for having me on, anyway. Yeah, just yeah. Seeing National Anthems is terrible.
Good to know. That's something I'll definitely save my money for. So, now... Phil, Phil, one time you had the very large NES collection. Is that still around now that you're with child?
Well, with
you made the crib out of your NES collection. Is that correct?
First of all, with child is generally used to describe the actual pregnancy. So I was never with child. My wife was with child. But she's now with the child.
Yes.
But in terms of
Force?
Not in this lifetime. But in one of my past lives, yes, I have been many aquatic creatures throughout
and Jigglypuffs.
You know what? Don't freaking Jade, not today, man.
It's for the children.
Oh, you're for the children. Your dumb face is for the children. Jigglypuff, Jigglypuff. There you go. If CJ didn't bore everyone to sleep with his inane prattlings earlier, the Jigglypuff song has now sent everyone to the left nod.
But watch for the smash after.
Yes. No, I do still have my NES collection. It is most of it is in storage at the moment because the baby's room, his nursery used to be my sort of nerd video game room, and that is where my collection was stored. And 700 plus NES game tapes take up a lot of room, so. So I realized I probably don't need to have that copy of Barbie or that copy of Fisher-Price Firehouse Rescue or WWF King of the Ring or whatever.
Far, you're playing games that are I would personally hear as games for my upcoming 2-year-old and stuff like that.
Well, you know, I want my kid to play good games. You know what? I have no idea how that Fisher-Price game is. That might be good. The Barbie game's terrible. The wrestling game isn't good. Fisher-Price, I don't know. I kept your Blaster Masters and your Mario's and such here at the house in case I want to play them. But the bulk of my collection is currently in storage.
Mm.
So there you go. Right. And that's our show for this week. Thanks.
Well, actually, not quite yet, Phil.
Oh, gee. Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because we actually brought you here to play a game we're calling... Steven, what are we calling this one?
Let's see. We are calling this one... I don't know.
Calling it... J.D. Roth was unavailable. Let's put it that way.
I could sing that "Call Me Maybe" song. Would you like me to do that?
Sing it in celebration if you win. Because basically, we brought you here because let's face it, you've written for Nintendo Power, you've written for EGM.
I have.
So of course, we're going to ask you 3 questions about the other gaming magazine in my youth, GamePro.
Oh yeah, GamePro. I read an ample amount of GamePro back in the day.
Excellent. Well, if you can get 2 out of 3 right, you'll actually win a prize for someone in the audience as well. And that's
what do I get? I'm the one answering the questions. Why?
Love and adoration.
Who's this scrub in the audience getting my prize?
That would be hacker alias BTP from Oshawa, Ontario.
Oh yeah, BT. Yeah, that's cool. He can have my prize.
Okay.
My answers. Oh, hold on here. I'm gonna say Scary Larry is the answer to number 1. Number 2 is CJ was almost sued over their Street Fighter cover. And number 3 is going to be Lame Pro.
Close.
Do you need to guess the questions?
No, close, but well, let's just give you the first one and see. See what it is. Okay, before the hacker alias, there was the GamePro alias. Which of these stories of aliases at GamePro are actually true?
If I actually called Scary Larry.
Well, A, Scary Larry now works for Microsoft as Major Nelson. B, fighting game reviewer Dr. Dave later worked on a Soul Calibur predecessor. Or C, Stephen Shook was going to write strategy guides for GamePro as the Brain Sturgeon.
What is Scary Larry up to these days? Oh man. I'm gonna go with the second one.
Dr. Dave, you're right.
Dr. Dave. Yes!
Yes, Dr. Dave, he worked on Weapon Lord, which was a weapons-based fighting game for Super Nintendo, and they used some of the ideas for that for Soul Edge and later Soul Calibur.
Look at that.
Yes.
Wasn't Scary Larry working at the Pokemon Company?
Is he really?
I think he was a few years ago.
Wow, I had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
You should have tried to sneak in a Scary Larry Pokemon.
How do you know that?
Well, I don't.
Haunter is based on him.
All right. Well, here's your next question, Phil. The biggest part of GamePro that's still around today is that their publisher foisted what onto the world? A, E3. B, Game Developers Conference. Or C, Booth Babes.
Oh, gosh. I'd like to say Booth Babes, but I'd like to say Booth Babes about anything.
You'd like to have Booth Babes hoisted on you?
I got a kid. Come on. Let's do this. My goodness.
It's a family show.
Yes. I am going to say... So it's E3 or GDC is what we're looking at, right?
Yeah, and it started in 1995.
Oh, 95. That's E3.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. GDC's been around for longer than that.
Yeah.
I don't remember how long, but yeah, it's E3. Hey, I just won, right? My 2 out of 3.
Yeah, right? All right, let's get the third one. What source of 80% of internet gaming news was on the cover of GamePro in 2010? Nintendo World Report, Rock Paper Shotgun, or the NeoGAF?
Oh, that was the NeoGAF, for sure.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Yeah, that was right after Davison took over and he put the NeoGAF on the cover.
Yes.
Pander much? Yeah, we don't do that on Player One Podcast because NeoGAF is so great that, you know, they don't need to get the extra hype because we love the NeoGAF so much.
Okay.
You know, one of our co-hosts was one of the co-founders of the NeoGAF.
Yes, it was.
True.
See, there's a little P1P trivia for you. Look at that, 3 out of 3, man.
Yes, indeed. You got 3 out of 3, and BTP, contact Johnny for information on your other prize.
What does he get? Do we know?
There's a long list of things available.
Oh, cool. Cool. And pick something awesome.
Yes.
Get something awesome. I don't know. Whatever.
All right. And actually, we have some breaking news here. We just crossed 4,000.
Really?
All right.
Nice.
Yes, we still our goal.
Yes, we have 1,000 to go for the extended goal. Yes, we're kickstarting this baby.
Yeah, don't forget, folks. You've only unlocked the fake ending. The true ending is $1,000 more away.
And you got to go back through all the other goals first. Probably pause real quick. Earlier question about the Game Developers Conference. It was first held in 1988.
Oh wow, it's that old.
Wow. Yeah, I thought it was 91, but
yeah, pretty cool.
It was just at somebody's house in 88.
Yeah, it was in a garage. That's where all computer stuff started.
Oh man, yeah, actually about
two
about
guys 88. At
coffee yeah, that's. Actually, a couple years before that was when I would go to people's garages and we would swap bootleg Commodore 64 games. So it's probably not too far.
I was on the internet.
Really?
Yeah.
88?
Yeah.
Man, oh man.
They had Gophers.
What are you counting as the internet? Like full on?
I'm counting Gophers and everything like that.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, I was hopping on BBSs around that time.
You know, there's still some of those around right now.
Are there really?
Yeah.
Man,
I'm surprised.
I used to be a co-sysop at a BBS back in high school.
You have to dial in with an old school modem, 2600 baud.
Yes.
All right. Well, I think we're running a little low on time here, and I hear a baby. I still hear Finn having a rough time.
That is Finn. Yeah, he's teething
that
now. Poor guy.
That baby scream means we're running out of time.
It's cute. Recording from a Walmart.
Yeah. Thanks for coming out, Phil, and best of luck. Hopefully you'll have something new soon to report.
We will see. And hey, congratulations on your 4,000 mark there.
Thank you.
That is good stuff.
All right, so Phil, we'll get Phil. Unfortunately, Phil has to drop off here, but we do have one more game to play here with an audience member coming up. Steven's FTL game, it got crashed by the Rhymulans in the Listener Limerick Challenge. So if you want to play the game, here's your qualifying question. Capcom spiked Wii U sales in Japan by announcing a blank bundle. Capcom spiked Wii U sales in Japan by announcing a blank bundle.
Otherwise known as a stay-at-home bundle.
So
Killer 7 for the Wii U. That's what it was. Oh, wait, I just said the answer. Damn.
This bundle is not officially sanctioned by Yamauchi.
All right. So while we get our wins, Carl's saying we have a winner. So while we get him situated here, I have some time here to fill. So Nate, what is so unusual about the Wii U selling this time? What's changed about the Wii U?
I'm sorry, what?
What's notable about the Wii U launch that's never happened before?
Oh, there are two different units that you can buy.
Hmm. Well, there's that, but there's another thing that they're doing.
No, that's the only thing. No, I don't know.
It's that they're selling it at a loss.
Okay.
Yeah, they're selling it as a selling it to in an effort to try to actually get the sales up. They're actually taking a loss, probably mostly on the R&D and trying to figure out how to get the tablet down to a cheap price. So, all right. So we have GX Akinda coming in to play the Limericks. Just getting him. See if we can get him add him to the conference here.
Yeah. In the meantime, guys, I just realized we're holding a podcast and we haven't talked about a rhythm game yet.
Uh-oh.
Anyone bring a rhythm game? Uh-oh, you know what that means.
Hello?
All right.
I don't know
so
if
we'll
really count the canon.
Yeah. Yeah, this one. We'll talk about that offline, but GX Canada, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Yes. Yeah, so you there?
I'm here. Can you guys hear
me? Yeah, we can hear you now. You weren't coming through very clear, but anyway, all right. So what you're going to do here, Steven's going to read you three limericks with the last word or phrase, which is a Nintendo game missing. If you can get fill in the last word or phrase on two of them, well, you'll win the game.
Are any of these dirty limericks?
Sadly, we've got some extra limericks for shenanigans now that we've gotten that far. But
the one for Raid on Bungling Bay is the dirty limerick.
Yeah, but that in general, we're playing podcasts, so.
All right. So, Steven, you have the first limerick there?
Yep. On your uncle's death, the die is cast. Save the maidens and do it fast. Oberon may hate it. It's an all-time 2D great. The Legend of Zelda.
Link to the Past.
Yes. Yes, I'm proud to say I finally beat for the first time this year without dying.
Really?
Yeah, without
that is impressive.
Without a, yeah, it took some work, but it finally took out. Now, Austin, do you want to read the next limerick?
Sure thing.
All right. it's the second one down.
Where did you post it?
There once was a man from Nantucket.
Sat around, sat on his tushes. No.
No. Oh, right. And then I remembered that we forgot to give him access to the document. Whoops. Because we didn't want spoilers.
Yes.
Here we go. Okay. In the Game Boy Color's last day came a platformer from the forward of Way. Her sprite and top were teeny, so you'll dream of this genie with her downloadable sequel,
Shantae.
Yes, Shantae. And now that they've announced the new version, Zach had an, shall we say, interesting reaction to it. I don't want to go any further into that because, well, that just disturbed me.
Don't worry, we're all slightly disturbed.
Some sort of Rule 34 thing going on there?
You could say that.
We're sort of doing it for the kids, not doing it to make kid.
All right.
All right. And, Stephen, I'll get you to read the final limerick.
On the ice you must show no mercy, or a loss to the Poles there will be. Three fat and a thin, for the mother-loving win, a bit of a black box classic.
No clue.
Ice, Polish people that you lose to, still not coming up with anything?
There is none of it this year.
What? Stephen, can you read it again?
Yeah. On the ice you must show no mercy, or a loss to the Poles there will be. Three fats and a thin, for the mother-loving win, a black box classic blank.
Oh, ice hockey?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You must win it. I was stumped by the rhyme scheme there.
Mercy be hockey, yeah. Yeah, but that's it. And how did he do there, Stephen?
Well, he got three right answers and will win a prize.
An honor prize, we'll say. An honor prize.
I have honor.
Yes.
More than I ever had before.
All right.
If you want my voice on your home answering machine, I can do that, definitely.
Well, thank you very much, guys.
Thanks a lot for coming out. All right. So now we've got one final game here now that we are running short on time. It's the Lightning Fill in the Blank. Basically, each one of our contestants is going to... I'll give them 60 seconds to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as they can. At this point, given everything that's happened, I don't think we can worry about the scoring, so... So, CJ, do you want to go first on this one?
Sure.
All right. So, you have 60 seconds. Clock will start when I read the first question. Fill in the blank. After a nearly three-year delay, the new Play Control version of Blank was released in June.
Pikmin 2.
Yes. Despite the appearance of one at June's Nintendo Direct, the Wii U does not have a system-level Blank system.
Achievements.
Yes. New version of Blank lets you turn over a new leaf and has you become mayor of
Animal
town.
Animal Crossing.
Yes. Epic Mickey returned in 2012 with a Wii and Wii U sequel and a 3DS platformer heavily based on the Genesis classic Blank.
Castle of Illusion.
Yes. Newest game in the Blank series for 3DS is meant to bridge between two console games.
Pass.
Castlevania. Among the games released in the Blank promotion, Kirby's Pinball Land, Kid Icarus, and Wario Land.
Ambassador.
8-Bit Summer. New Super Mario Bros. 2 was the first game released at retail and in the Blank.
eShop.
Yes. Everyone thought Nintendo would have one more big thing at E3. Turned out to be a blank in Nintendo Land.
I don't know.
Fireworks show.
I blocked that out of my memory as well.
Yeah. Well, there was only one piece of confetti, so...
Hardly a show.
Yeah, so how many was that for CJ, Steven?
That would be 7. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right,
so... Let's see. All right, and I think we can squeeze one more in here. Austin, do you want to take a shot at this?
Sure, let's go.
Okay. 60 seconds, fill in the blank. After its success in Japan, Reggie Fils-Aimé inadvertently announced the localization of Blank for 3DS.
Fire Emblem.
Yes. 20th anniversary of Blank was celebrated with a Wii disc containing 6 of its earliest games.
Kirby's.
Yes. Last major release for the DS, selling 1.6 million copies in its opening weekend in Japan, the newest set of blank games.
Pokemon Black and White 2.
Yes. Hang-Ass Racing franchise Blank is represented in Nintendo Land by a slot car game.
F-Zero.
Yes. 3DS XL launched in Japan on July 27th, accompanied by New Super Mario Bros. 2 and the newest Blank game.
I don't know.
Brain Age or Brain Training, whatever. Kid Icarus Uprising attracted attention, but it came bundled with a Blank instead of a Circle Pad Pro.
Came bundled with a stand.
Yes. Settlement reached in July allowed gamers to get money from EA if they bought a Blank game for GameCube or Wii after 2005.
Pass.
Madden. And for some reason, at the end of the June 2nd Nintendo Direct, Satoru Iwata was seen holding a bunch of Blank.
Bananas.
Yes. All right. Yeah, so... All right, so that... And we are getting the proverbial hook here, so we're going to have to wrap this up. Thanks a lot, guys, for everyone for coming on out. I was going to try to do an outro here, but I don't think I'll have time, even if, based on Player One standards, it'll take 10 minutes anyway. Yeah, so thank you very much, guys, for coming out. Just one last question before you go. What will Iwata be holding at the next Nintendo, at the end of the next Nintendo Direct?
Redzi's resignation letter.
CJ, anything you can think of for that?
Melons.
And Nate? Melons.
An F-Zero branded Wii U.
If Iwata is asking about any of these things, we'll be sure to talk about it on Nintendo Free Radio Night All.
Thanks a lot, guys, for coming out, and I guess we'll turn it over here to the 3DS report card. I think Johnny is coming in for that one.
So, by the way, thanks to the NFR guys. That was a really big thing for them to. They volunteered weeks ago to do something like that, and I know they've never done a live show before, and it was a little bit of a rocky start, but I think things turned out really well by the end, and they did a nice job. And that was a really complicated kind of segment to put together with a lot of preparation and script work and writing questions. So thanks to those guys for pulling it off and helping us to get even further through this telethon and towards our goals here. And actually, I have a big announcement to make. So I got an email from a guy a couple hours ago who said he had made a donation and it hadn't shown up yet. And I think it was just such a large donation that his credit card company held it up as potential fraud. And so I helped him get in touch with them, and he called them and got it all cleared through, and it went through. And I now have confirmation from Chip-In, which is the program, the tracking service that Child's Play recommends that we use to keep track of all this stuff. And I have confirmation from Chip-In that it did go through and that it is part of our event total, and that Child's Play did actually receive the donation. So it seems that our little widget here that we have on the website that's keeping track of the donations, it missed it probably because of this little hold situation that we had. And so now that we've confirmed that Child's Play did get it and that Chip-In did track it, we're updating our widget to manually make it show the new total. And so I'm going to – Carmine's working on that right now. I'm going to wait for him to set that up. But we'll probably have an announcement here in a few minutes once that gets going.
So it's $4,007?
I mean, that's what it is now.
That's awesome. I was wondering if the widget was – because I was refreshing just to see everything happen, and it just seemed like it stopped or it borked or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're trying to get Craig and Ariel in here. And the next segment is called 3DS Report Card. I'm really overcome with emotions and energy right now, but I'm going to try to save it for the shenanigans where it's a little bit more appropriate, because we do have some real content planned for this hour, and I want to make sure that we get to all of it. We have some fun discussions. So once again, we're having trouble bringing people into the call. Sorry about that. Give me just a sec. I'll see if I can do it a little bit different way. This is the fun of Skype. We've been struggling with it all day. That's just how it is. So
looks like Ariel is kind of there.
Hey, Ariel? What's up?
Hey, man. Hey.
Can you guys hear me?
Yeah. All right. Great. So we're making progress. Let me try Craig again.
So the shenaniganery is on hold for the moment?
Oh, no, no. We're going to do it.
Oh, okay.
No, we've made it to shenanigans. That's the next hour. I'm just saying my emotional outpouring is going to wait until the end of that, hopefully.
Uh-oh.
All right, so Craig's not hearing the ring. James, if you're listening, maybe you can try this since you're hosting the call, because it doesn't seem to want to let me do it. All right, so we'll go ahead and get started. This is the 3DS report card. This is a sort of a follow-up to a segment that we've done a couple of times. I think the first time we did it was for the DS way back in maybe 2007 or 2008. And then a couple years later, we had the Wii report card. And I wasn't even on that episode of Radio Free Nintendo. I was out that week. And Greg and Nate Mustafa and James and John did a really nice job of talking about sort of where's the Wii at right now, you know, what does it have yet to come, and sort of evaluating it on several different parameters. I mean, you know, the success of a platform is a kind of a complicated thing, and it's hard to boil it down into just one thing. So we're going to talk about 3DS from a few different standpoints, and you know, I think it's kind of cool just to take a snapshot for where we are right now in time with the system has been out for a while, about a year and a half, but it's still fairly new, and there's a lot more coming on. Hey, Craig, are you on the call?
I am on the call. Yes, I can hear you.
Finally.
Nice.
Woo-hoo.
All right. Hey, it only took like 2 minutes. That's not so bad.
That's true.
So let me introduce our panel here. First up, Craig Harris. You know him from IGN, where he worked many, many years, and Craig is now a producer at Sega. Though he's coming here as a private citizen, is that right?
Well, yeah, I'm here representing myself. You guys want to talk about 3DS? I love the 3DS, so I thought this would be a fun little chat.
Perfect. And of course, I mean, at one point you were running all of IGN's Nintendo content, but for a long time before that, you were primarily focused on the handheld stuff. So I thought this would be a really perfect fit for you, Craig, because you've covered Game Boy and GBA and Nintendo DS stuff for so long. Professionally.
Don't forget about the Wonder Swan. Don't forget about the Neo Geo Pocket Color.
That's right.
There were a bunch of them out there.
So, I mean, you're an expert on video games and Nintendo in general, but especially on handheld stuff. I think it's a really great opportunity to have you on and talk about this stuff. And yeah. I'm trying to think, I mean, since you're so much less in the spotlight nowadays, you're not doing very many podcasts and public writing as much. So we don't maybe know as much about what you think about 3DS. So I thought it'd be great to get some of your opinions on here.
Oh, yeah.
We've also got, of course, our good friend Billy Berghammer. You guys all know him. He's the founder of our dear website. And Billy just recently started a new job at 17-Bit, and we have him to thank for this awesome 17-Bit stuff in the prize list. We've got maybe the first ever giveaway copy of Skulls of the Shogun, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it will be an IOU, an Xbox 360 code once we have Xbox 360 codes. But yeah, the first copy ever. It's huge. If you have not heard, I'm obviously biased because I'm helping with PR, marketing, and media and community relations. But yeah, I just started with them a couple weeks ago. The game is really fun. I guess the easiest way to explain it is it's a little bit comparable to Advance Wars. So if you like Advance Wars, I think you guys will really dig that. But I'm biased, but I really like it. As a gamer, I think it's a lot of fun. And the asynchronous multiplayer between 360 and Windows 8 and Surface and Windows Phone is pretty neat stuff, and nobody else is doing it yet. So I'm glad to be part of the project. It's fun. It's cool.
And
so.
All those different versions are compatible with each other?
Yeah, you can play. You play on 360. You can, you know, all the stuff goes through the cloud. You know, it's kind of like Words with Friends, where you send a move and then the other person can do a move and et cetera, et cetera. So, nice. Yeah, it's pretty slick.
All right, man. Well, I'm looking forward to it. Does the game have a release date?
It does not. We will be announcing the game in a couple weeks. The release date in a couple weeks. So, stay tuned to my Twitter account and skullsoftheshogun.com and our Facebook page and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah.
Excellent. And finally, we have Ariel Ruff, who is a fairly recent addition to the Nintendo World Report staff. And Ariel's been doing a really awesome job with a weekly video feature called Inside the Bubble, which this goes up every Friday, right?
Yeah. Actually, it goes up every Saturday, but I try to get it done, you know, late Friday night.
Okay. So, yeah, Ariel hasn't been on a whole lot of podcasts yet. I think maybe you were on Connectivity once.
Yeah, I was on Connectivity holding down Neil's seat, and I had fun on there. And hopefully you'll hear me on podcasts in the future. Should be fun.
Yeah. Well, you have an awesome deep radio voice. So
thank you. So
I'm told. You should be on podcasts more.
I'll try to be. All right.
So, and Ariel was saying he really wanted to be involved here, and so I said, "Man, let's get you on."
Yeah, I mean,
so
awesome.
Let's get started here. Sorry, I'm trying to juggle a few things here on Skype. By the way, we are going to be taking some live call-ins later in the segment. So, if you'd like to talk to these guys about 3DS, if you have any thoughts on 3DS, if you want to give us your own grades for these different categories that we're going to be talking about, you can get a hold of Jared on Skype, and Jared will put his Skype name on the in the chat room. So if you're in the chat, you can see that and figure out how to get in touch with him. But otherwise, if you're just listening and you want to go in through Skype, let me get his Skype name so I can tell you out loud. Is DJLR, DJLR181, DJLR181. So Jared's going to be our support person this hour, which is great because we need it. It's really hard to handle all that stuff while you're talking. So I really appreciate all the support people throughout the day. And with that, we are going to get started. So 3DS report card is really just a fun evaluation of everything good and bad about the first year and a half of Nintendo 3DS and talk a little bit about what's ahead. So we've introduced everybody, and so I want to jump into the main discussion here. We're really just kind of – I'm going to name some categories for which we can evaluate the 3DS in some different ways, and we're going to go around and give our grades and just try to explain them and maybe talk it out amongst ourselves and figure out what we really think about this thing so far. So first up, I think, you know, one with any Nintendo system, one of the most important things is first-party support. So I wanted to start with maybe you, Billy, and get your what grade would you give? Let's just say an American style, you know, A, B, C, D, F style report card grade to first party support for 3DS so far.
I would say so far a B minus. I think at launch it was really kind of abysmal. You know, I was there for Pilot Wings. That was the game that I really, really wanted. But you know, kind of, you know, a Nintendogs reboot, which is really more of the same. It just wasn't a lot there, but then it really started picking up steam. You know, we've got Mario 3D Land, New Super Mario Bros. 2 was great, Mario Kart, Zelda, even though that was a remake, and I am, you know, I have one to always poo-poo Nintendo, keep re-releasing games over and over again, but that was a game I actually hadn't played for a really long time, so that was super fun to go back to, and it looked great in 3D. But I mean, to be honest, like, I think the releases are really sparse. This holiday is, you know, Paper Mario and New Super Mario Brothers 2, you know, and I was kind of surprised by that. You know, I would like to see a lot more, you know, obviously Reggie says, oh, we're all insatiable. Well, yeah, we want more than one game every quarter, you know, like, I guess I would like to see more games. You know, Luigi's Mansion, I was really hoping would hit before the end of the year.
Yeah.
You know, Animal Crossing, et cetera, et cetera. But, like, you know, it's not having any new Zelda yet is kind of frustrating. You know, I'd like to see them do a little bit more in the eShop, you know, first party wise. But we are getting Spin Cycle, which I think is really fun. I played that at PAX. But yeah, I guess I would, you know, I think we just need more games. I think that's the big problem. I'm really surprised that there isn't a bigger lineup for this holiday. So
do you think it's I mean, given over the whole year and a half, do you think it's just that they've released fewer games than you would like, or is it that some of the games they're releasing just don't interest you, and there aren't enough of the games that would interest you?
The total number
seems about normal to me, but I think some of their choices have been interesting in that, I mean, probably at least half of the first party games that Nintendo's released so far have had Mario in the title. That seems a bit overkill to me, you know?
Yeah, it was. I think it was a lot of Mario oversaturation, and plus on top of it, you know, it's coming out Wii U this holiday too, so I mean, that is just a lot of Mario, and trust me, I love Mario just like you guys do, but like, it's a lot, you know, and but, you know, as for core games, I mean, granted, there are, you know, the other games that Nintendo is releasing, but I say for core games, I think there just needs to be more, so... I'm insatiable, Reggie. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he doesn't like when you complain about not having enough of something. Craig, what do you think about the first party support so far?
You know, I'm with Billy on this one. The system came out with terrible first party support, and I think that was intentional more than anything else. You know, Nintendo wanted to go, well, you know, we're going to give third parties a chance, but they didn't really support the system. You know, people buy a Nintendo console and handheld for Nintendo games, and they didn't show any support whatsoever. They just kind of let the 3D sell it more than anything else, and that was kind of a mistake because, you know, people are still kind of lukewarm on the whole 3D technology. So there's that, you know, and you know, they gave some good games. Like, I mean, if you've ever talked to me in a podcast or even conversation, you know I'm a huge Pilot Wings fan. I love the original Super Nintendo Pilot Wings. I love the N64 Pilot Wings, and I was hoping that Factor 5 would, you know, finish off their GameCube version, but that never happened, right? So, you know, I was living the dream when they finally put out Pilot Wings Resort, and I plowed through that, you know, I 100%ed the whole thing, and I lost my cart. I think it was at E3 2011, so I had to buy it again. Luckily, it was super cheap. You know, it's pretty cheap now. Yeah, you can get it like for $15, and so I bought it, and then I plowed through it again, and 100%, because there's something about that game that resonates with my kind of game to play style. Like, I love just kind of taking my time and exploring, and doing like these short little spurts of challenges. So it's kind of like my game, but you know, it wasn't anybody. No one else kind of picked up that game, so. They don't really know the magic of Pilot Wings, or they just don't care. But then, you know, you had Pilot Wings and you had Steel Diver, which was a tech demo from back on the DS, you know, mm-hmm. 7 years previous. And so while it showed up 3D really well, it wasn't a very good game. I can appreciate for what it is, but yeah, it's not a $40 game, and I can't believe they tried to sell it for $40. I'm being dead serious. I mean, that game would have sold as a 99 cent app. And, you know, obviously you don't want to, you know, say, hey, Nintendo should be selling their games for 99 cents because that's ridiculous. But that, you know, the Steel Diver just is not a $40 game on any console. And that's why that didn't sell.
Yeah, I wonder if that was a situation where they probably in an ideal world would have liked to launch that on the eShop. And the eShop just wasn't ready yet, and so they said, well, let's go ahead and just print it on a card and sell it at full price.
Yeah, you're probably right on that. I mean, that seems like where it would, you know, find a really good home. But, you know, so yes, like Billy said, you know, the beginning was terrible, and if we had that report card thing, 3 months after launch, I would say, yeah, it's an F for first-party support. But, you know, now they finally got in their rhythm. They got all the Mario games out. Love 3D Land. I don't love Super Mario Brothers 2 as much as Billy likes, but I liked it. I got through the end, but I just don't feel like I'm compelled to 100% that game. I'm done. So I've moved on. So I like the game, and I appreciate a 2D Mario game, but I just didn't resonate with me as much as 3D Land did. But, you know, you got some really good N64 ports, Star Fox, great, Zelda, great. Paper Mario Sticker Star, that's coming out, what, tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Mario Tennis.
Yeah, after this whole telethon thing, I am vegging out with Paper Mario tomorrow.
But, you know, so they had the good games, but, I mean, I think they're now supporting digital in a big way, and Nintendo themselves are putting out some really good games on eShop that people, you know, like Pushmo, Dylan's was it Dylan's Western, which, you know, a lot of people didn't like. I kind of like that game. I played through it a good amount.
There's other games. Very divisive. Like it, like love it or hate it, almost.
Yeah, and I did like it, and but I mean, yeah, it gets a little repetitive. So, yeah, but I mean, like the eShop has a lot of great games, and I think Nintendo's doing a really good job of getting even their retail games on eShop. So, like, for example, the first game I'm going to buy that's retail on digital only is going to be Animal Crossing. And that's where it's going to – where the gameplay is going to be awesome, because now it's going to be on my system at all times. I don't have to swap out cards. I don't have to do anything like that. So I'm really appreciating Nintendo taking that step and encouraging people to buy a digital version if they want to. So yeah, so I'm with Billy, B-, simply because they had a terrible start.
All right. So, Ariel, what do you think about the first-party support so far?
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and give it a B+. Craig brought up two great points. I mean, Steel Diver, what the fuck was that? I seriously sat there while Reggie was selling the goods to me, like, this is going to be a great game, blah, blah, blah. The second I touched it, I just wanted to put it down. Like you said, $40 is way too much. You know, as far as first-party titles, they're coming out with good stuff. And the stuff that's to come is really great. You know, Animal Crossing, you have Paper Mario, which releases tomorrow. And they've worked it out in a way that, you know, we are not missing content. Like Johnny said, they have spread it out in much the same way they usually do in the past. And I haven't been really disappointed that much. I mean, Mario Tennis, I kind of didn't like that. But yeah, I'm pretty confident that they are on the right path. And then another thing that I don't think you guys talked about enough are the eShop titles. Pushmo, Crashmo, you know, Dylan's Rolling Western, even though that wasn't that great. But they're really doing good stuff. And then if you take into account the virtual console stuff that they've put out so far only on the 3DS, that's more first-party goodness right there. So yeah, I'm going to give them a B-, not an A, because of the trash that they released at launch.
All right. So guys, before we move on to the next category, I have a really big announcement. If you haven't been following the donation widget, we actually just updated it to make it reflect that big donation from earlier. And we are now way – actually, the status bar actually stretches out to pass the normal limits out to the edge of the widget. So what's going on here? We are currently at $5,526
of our shit.
Wow. Yeah, of our original goal of 4,000, and
let's
we
get
already
a round
have.
Of applause.
Yeah, it's. Thank you guys. So that's a couple of really big donations and also a lot of really small ones. And that's a pretty good coalition to put together here. So we have 130 contributors, which is absolutely fantastic. And we're not done yet. So let me just give a little update on the stretch goals here. And I said goals plural. So Carl has been sort of spouting off for a couple of days now that if we broke $5,000, which is already 25% over our original goal, he was going to release a long lost hour long podcast segment that we recorded at PAX East a couple of years ago, and it contains the infamous Red Velvet story. So you'll finally figure out what the fuck that's all about. Trust me, your ears are not ready. But it also has a lot of other crazy stuff on it as well. It's a whole bunch of us getting super drunk in a hotel room and telling stories that we probably shouldn't tell. So he's got a link to that he's going to put up at the end of the shenanigans segment here in about an hour and a half, and you'll be able to download that. And we'll make sure that that everybody has access to that link. If you really want to download that, we'll make sure that it's available to you. But also, we actually planned for this just in case people got really crazy and donated a whole bunch of stuff. I wanted to make sure that we were prepared. And we actually have another stretch goal, and you haven't heard about this at all. This is the first time I've said anything about it publicly. But if we make it to $6,000, which is currently less than $500 away, we're going to do something extra special, and we're going to produce some new content. It won't be today, but a little bit in the future, we are going to do a special live version of the retroactive feature that we do on Radio Free Nintendo, and we're going to play the most highly requested game for retroactive, a game that we probably would never do otherwise because we normally set up a few nominees and have a poll and have people vote for which game they want us to play and discuss on the show. And this game would absolutely dominate anything else we put in the poll because it was the first runner-up in our Game of the Decade poll, and that would be The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask. So if we make it to $6,000, the RFN crew is going to play and discuss The Legend of Zelda Majora's Mask, and sometime in the near future, probably around January, we'll do another special live edition of RFN where we'll have people come in, and we always have listener interaction during retroactive. We usually read off forum posts, but in this case, we will have people call in with their comments and questions and discussion points about Majora's Mask, and that is... Go ahead, Craig.
Actually, it's not Craig. It's James.
Oh, James.
Cut in. I'm very excited about that. Just wanted to throw it out there so everybody knew. And now,
yeah, me too. And Guillaume has never really played the game. He's only played like the first couple hours of it. So it'll be really interesting to get him to go back and give it another chance. And James and I are massive fans of Majora's Mask. And you know, when I was reviewing the Game of the Decade podcast for the Metroid Prime segment that we did much earlier in the day, I got to listen to the part about Majora's Mask as well, and it just reminded me what an endlessly fascinating and complicated and bizarre game that is. And I think it's an absolutely perfect candidate for retroactive. So if we make it to 6,000, we're doing a live retroactive on Majora's Mask. There is your stretch goal, people. Thank you so much, and please keep donating. That's the whole point.
That's so, in my pile of shame, by the way.
Really, Billy? We have to get you to play it and come on and do it with us.
I know. I'm like. It's almost a given that that game's gonna be released for 3DS, and So.
But it's $10 on Virtual Console.
Well, dude, I've got it like 10 different ways on GameCube. You know, so like.
The GameCube version's actually kind of busted, though.
I know. That's what and it did. It totally barfed on me. And so, like, I was like, I'm never going to finally get to play this game. So, I'll get to it. If we get $6,000, I'll play along with you guys. So.
Awesome, dude. And by the way, John Lindemann just mentioned in the chat, it's on his pile of shame, too. So we're looking at a very, very interesting...
That anything, though. That guy doesn't play anything outside of WoW and Monster Hunter. So, whatever.
Well, I think by pile of shame, he means he's never even started it. So that is going to make it... he said he's played about a quarter of it. But that's going to make it super interesting to do on retroactive. Now John's trash-talking you in Skype chat. So
how does one know that they've finished a quarter of the game?
Majora's Mask is pretty clearly divided up, though, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome. So, okay, we got to get back into the 3DS report card, but it is kind of an interesting segue because I think, you know, like Craig said, Majora's Mask does seem to be a prime candidate for a 3D remake on the 3DS, so it would be a good prelude to that as well if they ever announce that. So anyway, getting back to the report card, I think I would give it, for the first party support, I'd probably give it about like a B minus, like you guys said. I might even say like a C+. I mean, if I look at my at the 3DS games that I own, I have a few eShop games, and I'm pretty happy with those. You know, I think stuff like Pushmo is really, really good, and there's a couple others that I'm really enjoying. There's a lot to come. There's a lot of stuff in the future that I'm excited about, but the stuff so far is just okay on the eShop. It's just not a huge selection of stuff that I was interested in. And as far as retail games go, I honestly have only bought two or three. I think Mario 3D Land is the standout. I think that's the game that really pretty much everybody who owns a 3DS should have, and most of them do, thankfully. But that is probably my favorite 3DS game so far. But outside of that, Not a whole lot. I mean, I didn't even buy a 3DS right off the bat because there wasn't anything first party that really interested me. Pilot Wings, again, is to me, just knowing what I know about the breadth of that game and the scope of it, I would probably prefer to have a nice eShop version of it. And it, you can download it now, but it's at $40, which is outrageous. So that's not happening. I would like to pick it up eventually, but it was just never a big priority for me. And most of their other stuff really hasn't been super appealing to me. I did get Mario Kart 7, but I honestly haven't played it all that much since it first came out. Played it for a couple of weeks, you know, kind of sucked the first single player part kind of dry, and didn't really want to play that anymore. And the online stuff just it works okay, but it just was never all that compelling to me as a competitive racing game. So Mario Kart, I just haven't gotten a lot out of it. I played through the better part of Kid Icarus before I lost my copy of it, and unfortunately, I think it's really impressive in some ways, and I really appreciate them doing something weird and sort of outside their usual wheelhouse, but it's just not a game for me. But it's, whether it's the controls or really just the whole design of it, you know, the shooting part of it, just not all that crazy about it. So I think they have put stuff out, certainly. I mean, you can't argue that they haven't put out some big games. They haven't all been the big games that I would like to play, and I think most of those are still off in the future. So for me, it's probably kind of about average. It's like a C+ or a B-. It's good but not great. And moving on to the third-party support, I think this is going to be a very different tale. So, Billy, what do you think of the third-party support? I mean, do you really have a lot of third-party games on 3DS? Is there much out there that interests you so far?
I have a couple, but they were given to me, and they're not very good. I mean, name outside of anything from Capcom, name one third-party game that you have to have, like in your system, in your collection. Like, I can't honestly think of them. I think Capcom did a great job of Street Fighter. That was a lot of people's system seller, and it was a pretty good version of the game. And, you know, next year Monster Hunter I am very excited for that game. But, you know, outside of some, like, Metal Gear is a kind of a shoddy port. For me, there's not a lot there. I'm kind of thinking C-, you know, and I'm giving Capcom a big boost with Monster Hunter because I think that is just going to be fantastic from what I've heard and from what I've seen of it so far. So I might be missing something, but I really haven't seen anything third party that's really compelling for me to go, you know, that I would like hop off the couch and run to the store and buy it. So,
yeah. I'm actually scrubbing through all the list of third party games on the Wikipedia page, and Billy's right. Yeah, I mean there are some good titles, but nothing.
Kingdom Hearts. That's new and exciting. You know,
and it's unique. And it's like it's not a port. It's an original title and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, like, most of the games that are out for it, you know, are good, but they're, you know, versions that you can get elsewhere. I mean, Scribblenauts just came out, so I don't know if that's any good. There's a few good Lego games, you know, the Batman, but I'm all Legoed out at this point. But I think a lot of the third party stuff is mostly on the eShop.
Mm-hmm.
I you know, call me crazy, but I love Johnny Kung Fu. I thought that was a really cool retro game, and the Nicholas games. I'm plowing through Cave Story right now. Night Sky came out. That's really good. But, you know, again, these are not original games. These are not unique. These are ports. And Billy is also right that Capcom is the one that kind of backed it, the third party that backed it heavily. And so you got a really good Street Fighter. You got a really good Resident Evil. But beyond that, everyone just kind of are supporting the 3DS, but nothing super awesome, amazing in the third-party realm. But then again, that's always been the case on a handheld, right? It's, you know, they put stuff on there, but, you know, I don't want to say they're farting stuff out, but certainly, you know, they're not really kind of going all in with all the support of the you know, all the features of the 3DS can offer. It costs a lot of money to make a handheld game, and if the numbers aren't there, you're not going to put the budgets into it. And so you're going to get some good games, but most of the awesome 3DS games are going to be coming from Nintendo. But again, like I said, I probably, you know, back in the, you know, the start of the podcast, I said people buy a Nintendo handheld because of Nintendo games, not necessarily third party. And that's just the way it's always been.
Ariel, are you going to be a dissenting voice on this third party question?
Yeah, definitely. Hell yeah. I give it a B-. I think there's quite a bunch of third party support. If you take a glance at the chat, you can see everybody rattling them off. Resident Evil, that was a great game. Theater Rhythm, that was a great game. Mutant Muds, that was a great game. Even the ports, like Cave Story, that was a great game.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that there are third party games, but it's just, you know, going through, it's like, I played through Mutant Muds, that's great. Now it's available for other things, and that's the thing. It's like, do you like the game because it's on 3DS, or do you just like the game, period?
Well, I like to get, like, for example, Cave Story. I've never played Cave Story before, and the only reason I touched it, to tell you the truth, is because it was available on the eShop. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this was a thing that otherwise I would have never seen, even though I've heard, you know, everybody talking about it. I don't think they have the greatest third-party support. I mean, let's be honest. But I do think that there's great potential, and what they've done so far has shown me that. I think one of the main things that kind of hinders them a little bit is the, you know, leaving out the second circle pad on the system itself. So I guess we'll see. But, you know, Billy brought up Monster Hunter. I'm dying to get that.
So's Lindemann, apparently. So
yeah, he's pretty excited for it. but that's the future. I mean, what's come out so far... I'm kind of with you, Ariel, maybe for slightly different reasons. I'd probably give it about a B-. I think the third-party support in some ways has actually maybe even been a little bit better than the first party in terms of the variety. That's what you need. That's what third parties do, right? They do the things that the first party can't. And I think the variety has actually been pretty good on here. I have to say, it's mostly been smaller games. I mean, I wasn't really interested in Street Fighter or Resident Evil, so some of the really big kind of blockbuster type third party games, I didn't end up picking up. But I have picked up several of the smaller ones, and it's more niche stuff. But to me, that's what handhelds are great for. They have these kind of quirky games that aren't really like anything you would play on a console.
I just want to just interject one thing. It's just like, I think that the third party support is going to excel on the eShop. Nintendo's like super backing that digital domain, and that was one of the reasons why it was tough to have a good third party support on other handhelds. Is because, you know, cartridge based systems are very expensive. You know, you have to kind of buy into quantities. You know, when you're developing a game, because the cartridges are very expensive, and so, you know, it affected the, you know, how much budget they got for the development of the game. So, but now they can make the game that they wanted for handhelds and then put it on the eShop and then market it that way, and with, you know, very little cost, you know, with the overhead. I mean, they still got to, hopefully, you know, the marketing is enough to get people to click on that eShop icon on their dashboard to go there and see it, you know, and to buy it. So, right. But I think that, you know, more people are the more third parties are going to excel on a Nintendo platform in the eShop than they are going to be on the cartridge.
Well, and I think third parties should be really celebrating the fact that Nintendo is now selling their own games on the eShop, because even though it means more competition, also means that Nintendo is now has a really good selfish reason to drive as many 3DS owners as possible into the eShop environment, where they can also discover all these third-party games, even the really small ones like, you know, Mutant Muds and Bomb Monkey and things like that. So I'm actually really excited for that. And even though I would never buy Pilot Wings Resort for $40, you know, it's good that's in there. It gives people the choice. And I think it's worth doing. And certainly for the new games, I'm downloading Paper Mario tomorrow. I already have New Super Mario Bros. 2 downloaded, and I think it's a good game to have in that way, especially with the Coin Rush stuff. You know, any of these games where they have some Street Pass feature or they have something that's meant to really kind of stretch it out for a very long time, that's something that you'd like to have on the system. And just being able to access it any old time without having to find a game card for it, I think is a really nice feature to have.
Absolutely.
So let's move on to the next big topic, and that is online gameplay and connectivity. So connectivity, that's probably not the right word for it, but I think you can fold Street Pass into that. So maybe
functionality.
Yeah, you should consider that as well. You know, the Spot Pass, Street Pass stuff, online gameplay. It feels like online just isn't a huge part of 3DS in terms of, like, you know, playing games together online. But there have been a number of fairly high profile games that pulled it off pretty well. I think Street Fighter, both of the Resident Evil releases have had apparently very good online modes. Mario Kart has a very good online mode. And then there was that Heroes of Ruin sort of Diablo style game that came out over the summer, and that had voice chat. And I understand the online was maybe pretty buggy, but it certainly was a very ambitious feature. So how much have you guys played online with your 3DS, and do you think that's a really important part of it? Do you think it's been done well so far?
I guess I'll go first. Obviously the first game that was online was Super Street Fighter, and that worked really well. And then they had Dead or Alive that also supported online. Nintendo supported it pretty quickly with Mario Kart and Mario Tennis, but online is a nice to have for a feature on a handheld. But it is, again, one of those things that gets axed pretty early if games are, you know, costing too much or getting close to the release date. It's very hard to test, usually that's the first thing that goes, and it's a shame, but it's just the nature of the business. It's kind of cool that, you know, we, right out of the gate, it was, you know, supported online. There's no central support, which is kind of a shame. You know, like the games support their own online engine, and that's pretty much it. Nintendo doesn't have their own, like an Xbox Live or whatever. Yeah. So, and then of course, you know, you get the friends codes and all that stuff, which kind of mucks things up. But at the very least, the online support is way better on the 3DS than it ever has been on a Nintendo console. And I guess that's not saying much, because it's been terrible on pretty much any Nintendo console back in the day. You've got cool features like Swap Note, you know, that's kind of cool, you know, where you can, you know, send messages and pictures and stuff like that. I'm trying to think of other modes that are online on 3DS, but
Swap Note is such a wonderful idea, and the implementation is so annoying.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, if they follow through with a lot of just the standards, I think that it would have been way better. But it's kind of slow, and, you know, you can send something in and you won't get it for, like, you know, 6 hours or something like that. So it's like, you know, it's not like instant message. And, you know, we're still waiting for the ability to, like, you know, oh, you see your friend, what can you do with your friend? Well, nothing. Because, you see your friends list, and that you can't do anything. You can just hope that, oh, they're playing this game, okay, let me log on and see if I can connect with them, if they're playing Mario Kart, which is fine. But for the most part, if I had to rate their online support, I would say probably, you know, C-. But I do appreciate the games that do go online. I wish there were more, but I mean, I'm in development. Billy can, you know, attest to how difficult it is to get online, working in games. So it's, you know, I can appreciate it when it's in, but I'm not going to poo-poo a game.
We've got asynchronous multiplayer across 4 different platforms. We got this.
You know what, Billy? I'm glad you brought that up. I know you're promoting
I'm just trolling.
No, it's a totally relevant point. Where's the asynchronous gameplay on 3DS? I mean, and the crazy thing is, it's got Street Pass, which is really designed around asynchronicity. So the idea is that you have some progress in your game, and then you report that to someone as you pass by them, and then hours later they open up their system and they see it, and it either gives them something to compete with, or it adds to their totals or their experience or whatever. I think it's a wonderful idea, but why isn't that stuff being done online as well? I mean, the 3DS, yeah. It's, you think about the fact that when it's closed, it can still access the internet. So you could be, you know, it doesn't have to do it while you're playing some other game. It can do it in the off time. And the fact that you take it with you and that it can access, you know, all these free Wi-Fi points that are all over the place, it really seems like a missed opportunity. And that kind of gameplay is so popular now on smartphones. And I think when you combine the feature, which 3DS is totally capable of doing, but when you combine that with the kinds of games that you can do well on 3DS that don't work well on a smartphone, I think there's really a kind of a gap here that somebody needs to fill with like really good asynchronous 3DS game.
I'm going to say that my score, that my grade, did not incorporate Street Pass. I freaking love Street Pass. I think the idea is such a it's so great that it really makes what 3DS really what it is. I mean, the idea of, you know, just like randomly, you know, like crossing paths with somebody and swapping out data. I mean, I know it's limited. I know that you can only have 12 games going, and I know it's a really small bit of data that's being transmitted, but it's still enough to kind of give this like really cool, engaging thing that you just can't get anywhere else. And on top of that, that's the you know, the Spot Pass, which the thing can sniff out compatible Wi-Fi, even though you can only have like 3 live Wi-Fi, what do you call it, hotspots in your system itself. As long as it knows, like you're at Starbucks, and as long as Nintendo said, "Hey, Starbucks is now free," and you're just standing there, and all of a sudden, oh, it downloaded something like a video or something like that. I mean, it's still not perfect. Don't get me wrong, but the system, the 3DS, is so capable in terms of online that Nintendo's finally getting it. It's just they need to, you know, get kind of double down on getting the thing to work as good as what they're promising. Because yes. I mean, well, go ahead.
I'll totally agree with you on Street Pass. I mean, I feel bad going to panels at PAX or, you know, sitting in press conferences at E3 because I'm sort of paying attention because I'm street passing that like, you know, like crazy. Like, that's the only time that it works because we live in America. I mean, I don't commute to work and, you know, nobody in my office space brings their 3DS to work. So, like, the only time I can do that is, like, PAX or E3, and I clean up. And, like, yeah. I think it's great that you can do it internationally, too. You know, when I went to Japan, that was hilarious fun, you know, getting everybody's Miis and things like that. I thought that was really awesome. And I'd like to see more games incorporated. I know Street Fighter did a good job with it. I'm actually looking forward to Animal Crossing, even though I don't think it's that much different this time around. But the whole Street Pass
deal is
a killer. And that'll be the first game that I'll – and probably the – I like actual physical games, but I'll totally download that one just to have that on my system all the time. But as far as online, I think online for the 3DS without voice chat is an okay feature, but like I still think you need voice chat. That adds so much to be able to talk to people. You know, whether in Monster Hunter, you know you're on a quest together, or in Mario Kart where you want to talk crap against people. Like I think the lack of voice chat in a lot of the games really, really hurts it.
Well, to be fair, the version of Monster Hunter 3 that's on 3DS in Japan doesn't even have online play, much less voice chat. And it's possible that they might add online for the Western release. I don't think there's any confirmation of that yet. I mean, they did for the Wii game. So I wouldn't rule it out, but it seems maybe unlikely considering the market size that they have now. I think Monster Hunter 4 is confirmed to have online play in Japan, and so that one there's a much better chance of it.
Well, and you just brought it up, the Wii game. I mean, that used Wii Speak, which was like the shittiest speakerphone of all time. That would
I give Capcom credit for trying to make it work. I mean, it wasn't their choice for Nintendo to use Wii Speak.
Sure, but they
said, this is what the system has, and we know people want voice chat. We're going to support this, even though we know it sucks.
And I'd like to see some connectivity, especially with Wii U coming out. I don't see why that would not be a viable thing. I think most people that are going to buy a Wii U probably have a 3DS at this point. And I know my understanding is Monster Hunter works with 3DS and Wii U or something like that.
Yeah, you can play together.
You know, and that's awesome. Let's see more. I would, you know, I like what Sony does with the Vita, even though it doesn't sell really well, but like buying one game, like why not have a new Super Mario Brothers where you can take it on the go and then when you're home you can play it on your Wii U. I think that sort of stuff would be honestly, you know, fantastic. And I would double dip if I had to. Like, not that I really want to, but, you know, because I like how Sony does, you buy one SKU and you get it on both. But I'd like to see more connectivity. Nintendo's the company that invented the crap. Like, let's now we have wireless systems with Bluetooth and you know, and all that. So I think it would be a thing that I would like to see. I'd probably give online, you know, a C at this point. The only reason it's so high is because I freaking love Street Pass, and I want all the picture pieces, and I want to, you know, get through the RPG 100 times and get all the silly hats. Like, I love that stuff.
And yeah, they just added Kirby. I don't know if you got Kirby on your was it Return to Dreamland? They have a new mural. Turn on your system.
Turn on your system.
So, guys, we're going to have to hurry up the segment here. We're going to try to get some live callers in the last few minutes. So anybody listening, if you want to talk to Billy, Craig, and Ariel and myself about 3DS stuff, you can send a Skype message to Jared. He's our assistant for this hour, and Jared's Skype name is DJLR181, and hopefully he will repeat that in the IRC chat as well. And if you send him a request, we'll try to get you queued up and get in here before the hour is up. But I also wanted to give an update on donations because we have now passed $6,000, which means this Majora's Mask thing is happening. Wow. This is
crazy pants.
This has been a pretty insane day, guys. We came in here with a pretty ambitious goal of trying to raise $4,000, which was a pretty good increase over what we did last year, and we have now surpassed that by 50%. And we're still going, and we're still collecting donations. This is all the stretch goals we can pull off today. Sorry, but it is still a great charity, and we hope that if you just recently started listening, or if you're listening to the recording, and you didn't get a chance to donate earlier, the donation link is going to stay open for a couple of weeks after this is over, and we would really appreciate you contributing to it. And of course, it'll help us figure out what the goals will be for next year when we do this all over again. So it really has been an incredible day, and I'll save the rest of my thank yous for a little bit later, but I just wanted to give everybody an update on what's going on with that. So anyway, we will queue a few people up for calls, and in the meantime, let's wrap this up. I'm truncating the notes here for the segment a little bit, so we've had so much outside news to cover. I wanted to kind of ask you guys what you thought about the future prospects for 3DS. If you could give a report card grade to the future of 3DS, what do you think? I mean, we've got it's clearly beating the war against Vita. It's doing better than some people expected in the face of competition from smartphones, iPads, things like that. And the Japanese support for it, the developer support, is starting to spool up, and we're even seeing a couple of shining spots, I think, on the Western third-party support side. So with Nintendo having its own slate of things coming out, some of them announced, some of them just sort of expected, like a new Zelda game coming out maybe at the end of 2013. What do you guys think about the future prospects? Do you feel pretty confident that this system is going to go the way of the original DS, where it really is just a huge success and maybe a slow burn, but over time it really just becomes inevitable that it's the next big handheld system? Or do you think its success is going to be kind of limited by all the new environment that it has to work into?
Who wants to go first? Billy, you?
Yeah, I'll start. I think the future is still pretty bright. Nintendo's still going to trickle out games. I think we'll still see, one or two games possibly per quarter. But Luigi's Mansion, I'm super psyched for it. Sticker Star, hell yeah, I'm on board tomorrow. Monster Hunter, Epic Mickey, Fire Emblem, Animal Crossing, like, those are all great, but I'd like to see more new IP. I would like to see the promise of all these 3D movies that they said we were going to see. Now that you have the XL that has a huge, beautiful screen, I would actually watch a movie on it. Before, I sure as hell wouldn't, when I've got an iPad and everything else. I guess I do think it will be. It is the next big handheld from Nintendo. It did definitely start out small, but once we see a new Pokemon on this thing that is in 3D, this thing is going to sell like crazy. And Monster Hunter alone, wrestling that away from Sony, it's a huge thing for Japan. And, it hasn't had a huge explosion here in the U.S., but, I mean, getting that support in Japan, that just means that's just huge. And, I do think it's going to keep selling really well. I think it is the handheld to beat for sure.
Well, from my perspective, I think that this is probably going to be the I don't know if it's going to be the last great handheld, but it's certainly going to be a tough sell to get a next generation out in the market in this kind of, you know, climate, you know, where you know, now cell phones can play awesome games and stuff like that. So Nintendo is going to have a really tough sell to for a next generation of handhelds. So I think they're going to be in this one for the long run. The 3DS is going to be their thing. They'll upgrade the next one. You know, maybe they'll put another circle pad. I don't really care about the second, not having the second circle pad on there.
What? You're crazy.
It's really not important.
I kind of want more first-person shooters on there, you know, because of it. But I can say that they'll probably, you know, upgrade the screen to have, you know, higher res. But I cannot see Nintendo going, okay, we're going to start from scratch again. Here's a new platform. You know, it's backward compatible with the old stuff. But in trying, what's that?
Hey, Lewis, hang on just a sec.
So I think that So I think that Nintendo is going to be in this one for the long run, and plus the system is fully upgradable, so you can download new stuff, new features, and anything that a new gaming mechanic, in terms of like what firmware needs to be in there, they can upgrade that, which is something that the past systems, well, the DSi could, but no one really cared about that. I think that this is going to be it's a slow burn, super super popular. But it's going to be and take a few years to do it.
All right. What about you, Ariel? How do you feel about the future?
I think the future looks very bright. I mean, with all the systems that they're selling, they're definitely demanding attention from developers. So I think that's going to come in the future. And like Craig said, the system is upgradable. And I think if they find a way to upgrade the online features, you know, bring it more to Wii U levels where you can send messages to your friend, invite friends to games, things like that. Setting up the eShop so you can take your game licenses with you. If they do that, I think the system will really take off, and I'm pretty sure we'll see another handheld from Nintendo.
Better have a right stick. Seriously.
It'll have two sticks.
Who the hell would not pay an extra? I would pay an extra $50 to have the XL with the right stick. I have a Franken stick. Now it's worthless because I'm not going to play my old 3DS, and I'm waiting for the new one, even though it's going to be ginormous. Like,
humongous.
you'd be able to have easier ports by developers, which I think third parties would really, really enjoy. I mean, Kid Icarus alone, if it had a right stick, the controls would have been normal, and it would have been fun, and you know, it's just that right stick for 3D games. If you're navigating a 3D environment, you really need something like that. And it's a shame.
Really quickly, I just wanted to say it's weird with the whole two stick thing. It seems like a trend that Nintendo seems to be on, where they do this backhanded compliment kind of thing. You can see it with the Pro Controller, where they don't have a headphone jack. Like, that's something that I think would be incredibly simple to implement for them, and they just left it out, like, trolling.
So they Nintendoed it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Sorry.
But you can plug a headset into the gamepad, which is probably nearby.
Yeah, it's like playing Monster Hunter on the Wii when you're playing through Xbox Live, because that's the only way to talk to people. Like, this is more crap. I don't know. That's my own, you know, we glanced over the hardware thing, and that was the one thing I had to talk about, was that right stick. It's just, it's crazy. But, I mean, Monster Hunter, seriously, Monster Hunter alone, that game needs a right stick. Like, it's...
Well, they provided one in a weird way. Uh-huh. For my money, I think 3DS is going to turn out to be just fine, and I think the first party support is a little laggy, but I think they're catching up, and the stuff that we've got coming forward is really good. I feel very, very strongly they should have a Metroid game on this thing, and I'm hoping for some really good RPGs as well. Paper Mario sounds like it's not even really an RPG. I do think it'll be great. But I'm interested to see, once the big Japanese RPG developers come in and really start supporting it, which it feels inevitable with the way things are going. And I'll just make a prediction for the future, but some people might think I'm really crazy about this. But if you look at the way the Final Fantasy series has been going and the problems that they've had on the HD consoles, I think they're going to be looking to make the next big Final Fantasy game for less money and not more money. And I think the best way to do that would be to put it on a system like Vita or 3DS. And I think even though you wouldn't really even imagine this as being possible 5 years ago, I think there is a serious possibility of Final Fantasy XV being a handheld game. Just for the fiscal realities of the gaming industry right now, it just makes more sense that way. And I think something like that could be really, really huge for the 3DS. So we'll see. But while we still have a few minutes here in this segment, I want to bring in Lewis. Hey there, Lewis.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Fantastic. My question is to do with the new Smash Bros. Coming out to the 3DS.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Basically, we don't know much about it yet, but what we do know is it's going to link to a Wii U game of Smash Bros. So my question is, what are your thoughts of what sort of connectivity they will have between these two Smash Bros. Games?
Yeah. I've never really given it any real thought. I mean, until other than like cross platform play, where you can, you know, have someone on a handheld doing certain things within the whole, you know, combatant environment, but you know, and that's going to be up to Sakurai to figure out.
What if, you know, if you look at the boost mode in New Super Mario Bros. U, I could see there being a lot of fun in having someone on a Wii U gamepad or a 3DS using the touchscreen to sort of place items and make things happen in the level. And I think, you know, if you think about the way Smash Brothers is and how there's just a lot of chaos already existing in the environment, having someone be able to control that a little bit and try to pit players against each other or really try to troll a certain player, that could be really fun.
But I mean, the thing is, you know, it's going to be a Wii U title too, so you're all going to have that functionality with the gamepad. So, you know, if you got to think about, you know, a different way that the 3DS can affect it, and it's actually kind of tough because, you know, you're already going to have that gamepad in play, and then controllers connected to the system as well. So now, what does the 3DS do that the gamepad cannot do?
Yeah, and there's an implied question here of, is the 3DS game basically the same as the Wii U game, or are they very different beasts? Because that really changes how they interact with each other.
I think it should be similar, kind of like what Sony's doing with. Well, there's Smash Brothers, but Sakurai is a huge collectibles guy. He loves, I mean, look at Kid Icarus, but having something maybe with trophies and Street Pass, where, you know, your buddy's really good and he's got some crazy trophy or whatever, I don't know. But
yeah, Street Pass is definitely going to be something, I think.
Oh, absolutely. So.
Yeah, Street Pass will be really interesting, but I think it also speaks to a question of the single player mode, because either way, I mean, single player has been something that's been part of Smash Brothers all along, but it's never been great. And the Subspace Emissary mode in Brawl, that we've talked about a lot on the RFN podcast, but it's like, I really appreciate the effort that was put into it, and there's a certain ambition in trying to tell a story that actually involves all these characters. And I think the story part of it is great. It's stupid and fantastic and just bizarre, but the actual playing of that mode is not that much fun. It's kind of like a really bad Kirby game with a bunch of characters that don't really, you know, the controls of Smash Brothers don't really fit very well into a platformer. Right. And trying to make level designs that accommodate all these different kinds of characters is really hard to do. And it's so disjointed and confusing, and it's really just kind of a mess. And what I would love is if they really put a lot of effort into making a really good version of that, or some maybe slightly different version. Maybe it's more like an RPG. You guys remember Tobal number 1 and number 2 for the PlayStation?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a 3D fighting game that had a really interesting RPG mode. And I think it was made by Squaresoft, and I think the idea was to make a fighting game that you could enjoy as a single player. And it had, I mean, you had inventory, you could use items, you leveled up your character. I think having something like that for you to do as a single player game, and then being able to and maybe it's just totally separate from the multiplayer. But if you're doing that, I could see it being a lot of fun to move your progress in the RPG mode back and forth from the console to the handheld version, which is a little bit like what Sony's proposing with Vita. And maybe just keeping it separate. At the same time, I think cross-platform online multiplayer would be amazing. If the games are similar enough and you could get the lag down, that you could actually actually fight back and forth and have one person on the Wii U and another person on the 3DS far away, I think that would be really amazing. But that seems really hard to do. So, Lewis, thanks for your question. We're going to have to let you go because this is the end of the 3DS report card, and we've got shenanigans coming up next. Yeah, thanks, man. So we're going to say goodbye to our guests here and bring in a new crew of people for the shenanigans segment, which Carl is hosting. Craig, were you saying something?
Nope, that was your caller.
Oh, okay. Wanted to say a really big thanks to Billy and Craig for being our special guests on this segment, and really thank you guys for bringing your expertise, and I know I will talk to you guys very soon.
Yeah, sure. Happy to be here, man.
And congrats.
Thanks, man. Ariel, of course, it was really nice talking to you as well, and I'm sure we'll be back in touch soon as well.
Definitely. Thanks for having me on, and congratulations for the whole team for hitting the goal.
Good job, guys. Thanks, good job.
Absolutely.
And everybody, make sure to go watch Inside the Bubble on YouTube and on Nintendo World Report. Go play Skulls of the Shogun as soon as it's out sometime in the future. And also be sure to check out Aliens Colonial Marine sometime in early 2013.
That game is badass, let me tell you right now.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
I really enjoyed it, too. So we're going to say goodbye to these guys, and what's going on with Skype? Carl, take over.
Johnny. Right.
See you guys.
Bye.
Johnny. It has been a long day, sir.
Oh, boy, has it.
Oh, my goodness. All right, so I think I've got Zach here to be our support guy for this.
He just vanished.
Uh-oh. He just vanished? Fantastic. Yeah. All right, well... Look, folks, it's been a long day. It's been a trying day. He's here.
We'll get him back on.
We'll get him in. We'll get him here, James. Okay. Yeah, Zach's going to be on support.
We need to get John Lindemann on here.
I don't want to be the only person who says the F-bomb today. Come on, somebody else said it.
Oh, come on. Lots of people have said it today.
Okay, fine. Where the fuck is John Lindemann at? There.
There we go.
I'm trying to get him in.
Oh, Baldy, and
get in here.
And Gui's going to be getting on here, too.
Ah! So, Paul, I think the shenanigans segment could easily be taken as a victory lap, and trust me, it will be that. But yes. You're the host for this hour.
Yes, sir, I am.
Tell us what else is going on with shenanigans.
Well, you know, I was thinking about where we are, you know, where the Wii U's about to come out, and, you know, at every launch, really, there's always a little bit of that specialness of getting a new console, and it's made me think about, you know, the new consoles that I've gotten, you know, since I was a kid. And it got me thinking, I'd love to hear about the first console launch you guys ever got. So, like, the first time you've ever gotten a console at launch, what that console was and what it was like, you know, as a kid to get that brand new console when it was still brand new among all of your friends. And
it's a GUI here, as Carl said.
And yes. I just got
graphical user interface.
yes.
Awesome.
Yes.
Is John here?
Yeah, I'm here.
He's not going to talk. John's just going to be on the segment and say nothing.
Yeah. Lenny's got nothing to say. Let's be honest.
I'm just going to flirt.
He has so much to say, but more on that later.
Yes. And, I mean, first of all, I just want to say this is a bit of a victory lap because, you know, starting today, I mean, last year our goal was 3,200, and this year we raised it to 4,000. And I'll be honest, there were a couple times during the day today where I was like, I don't know, it's looking kind of dodgy.
Yeah.
and you know, getting that massive donation of $1,500, I feel just injected so much life back into the show. I mean, it was already growing great, but I feel like that just took us to the next level. And the fact that we made it to $6,000 is, I don't even know how that happened.
And we're still going. We're still taking in donations.
And
I mean,
we're still going. Look, if we get to $7,000, I will record all of you custom voicemail messages.
Oh, good.
What are the logistics of that process? Yeah, we're actually currently at 6,178 with 103 contributors. That is so freaking awesome.
So donate $850 and make Carl's head explode.
Yes.
So have we actually reached a Majora's Mask
threshold?
Oh, yeah. That's happening.
Sorry, Guillaume. You're going to have to play it again.
That's happening. I'm so excited.
And yes, at
$5,000. I'm aroused at the prospects.
At $5,000, we didn't unlock the Red Velvet package.
The Red Velvet package.
It's like DLC.
It sounds like a trim line on a Mercedes.
Oh, it comes in its own Ziploc bag.
Indeed, it does, or a paper bag. You know, these folks are going to be getting that soon. At the end of the hour, I'll be dispersed in the URL, and I don't really know how that's going to work out. I don't know what's going to happen, but it'll be exciting. It'll be interesting. In fact, maybe we can all hang out in the chat and listen to it together. But
that would be really trippy.
it'll be a shared experience. But look, getting back to the subject at hand, I'd like to just sort of go around the room and talk about sort of our first console that we got at launch. You know, what that console was, what it meant to us, how old we were. You know,
can that include handheld? Can that include hand? John's like 58. What? Yeah.
The first time,
and it was the 2600.
I don't know if
What's
I can
problem?
Speak in old English. I don't know if anybody will understand.
Forsooth, my 2600 doth die. So, can it be handhelds, or are we limited to consoles?
Let's say anything, any system. So, handhelds or consoles.
Okay. What the hell's Virtual Boy?
Was that really it?
No, God, no. What? No, I bought that later when it cost way more because I'm stupid.
Yeah, my first console at launch wasn't actually a Nintendo system.
Traitor.
It was. Well, I mean, I've said it before on this podcast. I said on the very first RFN Child's Play Telethon that we were a Genesis household, not a Super Nintendo household, and the Sega Genesis was my at launch console. It was. I remember my parents brought it home, and God, I must have been. When did the Genesis even come? I must have been like 2 years old. It was. I was really, really, really young, and they unveiled it, and it was. And I honestly, like 2 or 3 years old, I don't really remember very much of it, other than I think I might have thrown one of the games out by accident, and I think they actually had to fish it out of the trash bag. Which, there you go. Already, I knew that Sonic 1 was shit.
It is kind of bad.
The dirty secret of the Sega Genesis is that Sonic 1 is kind of a bad game.
It's actually my favorite.
But he's got so much attitude. He's got so much attitude, Carl.
It's a bit of a bad game. Sonic 1 is not a great game, but Sonic 2 and Sonic 3 more than make up for it.
Sonic 3 is my favorite.
And
by
what does
far.
Shadow the Hedgehog do for? Out of curiosity,
brings it back out of the gutter.
I think Sonic 1 has not aged as well as other games. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, my first home console at launch was a Sega Genesis. So I'm gonna go ahead and pass it off to Johnny.
Sure. My first one the first console launch that I actually got the system at launch, and actually paid for it with my own allowance that I'd been building up for months and months in anticipation, was the Super Nintendo Entertainment System. Mm-hmm. And it was the old like EGM cover with the like illicit screenshots of Super Mario World and the previews in Nintendo Power. I was like having. I think I've mentioned this before. I was having very, very lucid dreams about playing Super Nintendo before it came out. So to say that I was excited for it would be an understatement. When we went to Walmart and picked it up the day that it came out, that was the only place to buy stuff like that in my hometown back then. Ooh. And the next day I took the instruction manual from Super Mario World, which came with a system, and I took it to school and showed it off to all my friends, and I was immediately the coolest guy in school for about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
That would never happen again after that. But for a very brief time, we were still young enough. I mean, I was 9 years old, and we were young enough that having the brand new Nintendo system first was a huge deal. And, I had people coming over to play it. I remember a couple months after that, I had a birthday party, and I had just gotten Gradius 3 and a couple other things. And all of my friends at my birthday party went down to the basement where we had it hooked up to a TV down there, and we all sat around playing Super Nintendo for like 3 hours. This mm-hmm. just became a huge deal. So that was the big one for me. And after I took the system home and played the crap out of Super Mario World and rented F-Zero and stuff like that, the very next point of order was for me to become totally obsessed with Link to the Past, because that game kept getting delayed, and so I was calling the poor people at KB Toys and all the other game stores around town, and basically every single day. 8-4 mentioned this on their Super Nintendo podcast, but like back then, you didn't really know when games were coming out,
yeah.
and they would get delayed, and you wouldn't know about it for a long time because of like print magazine.
Right, the internet didn't exist.
Right. Yeah. So yep. You didn't, and the usually the people in the store didn't know when it was coming either. And you would say, "Well, do you know when it's coming out?" And they'd say, "No, you'll just have to keep calling and asking." I was like, "Okay." So that was my ritual. I would come home from school every day and immediately go to the phone book and look up.
Oh my God!
It got to the where I actually had memorized the phone numbers of all the stores in town, and I would just call them through in a cycle to see if any of them knew the latest on these games.
So what happened when someone finally said yes?
I flipped out, and I went and grabbed my mom and said, "Please, you have to take me to the store right now."
That's awesome.
So that's my story.
Cool. All right. What about you, James?
So the first system I got at launch was actually a Game Boy Color.
Oh.
So relatively late. I got an NES in 90. I got a Super Nintendo sort of floated through my life, but I never owned one. The N64 I got with the Star Wars Podracer package.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one. Yeah.
That sort of dates when I got it. But the Game Boy Color I got at launch. And the reason I ultimately ended – I had a Game Boy since – I don't know. That may actually have been a launch Game Boy. I don't particularly remember. I got it for Christmas from a very well-heeled aunt. And I just remember like that being a particularly emotive experience. But the Game Boy Color I got, I had deliberately said I wanted it. It came out – I can't remember exactly what time of year it came out, but it was near a season where I would receive gifts, either a birthday or Christmas. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And I got it. So I ended up getting the system and being super excited. But the reason I ended up wanting it was because, if you recall, about a year prior to that, the Game Boy had just gone through its sort of rebirth with the release of Pokemon in the West.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Game Boy games started to become – you know, I sort of look at Game Boy games before and after Pokemon. Most of the games that came out before just seem a lot simpler. You know, they mm-hmm. were much more sit down, play for a few minutes, turn off kind of games. Puzzly stuff, you know, like Bub and Bob shooting balls at things. And then after that, there just seems to have been more of a diversification and enhancement of large-scale games on the Game Boy, and that cascaded into the GBA. So for me, having a Game Boy Color was a big deal, because now I've got my automated colorization of the Pokemon, which looked awful, because it was basically the same thing that the Super Game Boy did, which decided everything is now yellow.
Yes.
And then everything became yellow. But it became a big deal until I brought it to school and realized – or had it on the bus and realized half my friends also had them. Because
right.
For whatever reason, the Game Boy became a huge deal right after Pokemon came out. So.
Oh, yeah. When Pokemon came out, is that when they also put out the Slim Game Boys?
No, I think that was earlier.
That was earlier? Okay. That's when I got my Game Boy and Pokemon shortly afterwards. But yeah, I remember, the Game Boy Color colorized all of your older games.
Badly.
And they did. Oh, it looked like crap. It looked terrible. Like the grass was red. And
it's lava!
It's lava, basically. Yeah, it was terrible. But the worst, though, is that I got the – right before the Color came out, I got the Slim.
Oh.
I know. And so I had to play a bunch of those Game Boy Color games, which you could play on old Game Boys, but they were terrible. Because, you know, the big gimmick is, oh, it's in color. Now we can do color-based puzzles and, right. you know – and so
Silver – Gold and Silver is my favorite of the whole bunch.
Yeah.
And part of the reason is that they colorized it. I mean, it was a properly color game, and they actually made good use of it. So I had gotten Link's Awakening DX,
mm-hmm.
which is the only time Nintendo decided, oh, let's use the DX moniker because that makes sense in the West. And I got that with my Game Boy Color, and I was just fascinated by the fact I'm holding a color video game system. Granted, the Game Gear had been a thing for a while, but
it was never a thing.
It doesn't really count.
It's barely handheld. multi-handheld. Exactly. But yeah, I mean, it was actually just really exciting to finally have a color handheld system.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course it got spiked about 3 years later by the GBA.
Did you ever use the infrared on it?
I tried one time, because very little things actually supported it, because it's a stupid idea.
Yeah.
I think every developer looked at that as the dumbest fucking idea I've ever seen.
Yeah, well, 3DS still has it.
Well, it actually uses it for its Franken controller.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, other than CirclePad Pro, I don't think the infrared port's gonna ever get used very much on 3DS.
No, the best part is the XL still has it, so it can be compatible when it's CirclePad Pro comes out.
Yep.
There you go. Yeah, I was going to say,
if you could make the original CirclePad Pro physically fit the XL, I think it would probably work.
It almost certainly would.
If you could carve out the plastic to make it somehow fit onto there, it would probably work.
Sounds like something for a YouTube video.
Hey, did I miss John's answer to this?
We haven't gotten to John yet.
Yep. Are
we
you
haven't asked about John? John was around for Hoop and Sticks.
I'm just chill. No, actually, the first console I ever had at launch was actually chess. I mean, the actual chess board. It was about $14.75. You know, it was Europe. You know, it was crazy times. But looking through all the consoles I've owned, I didn't have an Atari 2600 at launch. Then there was a Sega Master System, which I didn't have at launch. The NES I didn't get at launch. TurboGrafx-16.
Wait,
16.
Did you buy a Master System?
Yeah, I did. Yep.
Get the fuck out.
Yep. TurboGrafx-16 I didn't get at launch. I never owned a Genesis. Super NES I didn't get at launch. So I think the first one I got at launch, I believe, was the Nintendo 64. And I remember going to get it at EB Games. I actually had it pre-ordered. I remember what I got with it was this. It was like, looking back, it was pretty much the lamest pre-order kind of, you know, gift ever. It was this... It was just like this kind of plastic, you know, emblem saying, thank you for pre-ordering the Nintendo 64. And it had like the date of its launch and everything on it. And really? Like, that was all they threw in. Yeah, I still have it around here somewhere. I'm going to get it. It's like, it's really super lame. Like, it's really neat and cool, but it really
looks good. I want to see it. I want to see this.
Yeah, I know where it is. I'll get it. Yeah, it was just really weird. It was like this, it was just.
It might be a collector's item for all we know.
No, it came. It came
and especially
in
because it probably has the wrong release date on there.
Yeah.
They actually released it a few days earlier than originally planned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But
back
when
that kind of shit happened.
Yeah, it was kind of this, like, you know, just this cardboard picture of the console. It's funny. I'll try and find it. But
stupidest thing ever.
Yeah, it's so cheeseball.
Oh my god.
64 was a really good launch, just in terms of being excited for it, and it was like very early days of internet, so you had some online hype, but it was also the heyday of gaming magazines.
Yeah.
And so there was more print coverage than there was back when the Super Nintendo was coming out. And there was it just generally felt like there was more awareness of N64. And Nintendo had done some really interesting things to help build that. They've been sending out these VHS tapes, you know,
to
power subscribers. They were putting Ultra 64 logos into arcade games that were developed by Rare and Midway. So they had done much more pre-release awareness for N64 than they had for other systems.
Can you imagine using arcades as an advertising mechanism for a game system?
It's a choice nowadays.
Yeah, but that was just it, right? The reason why I even knew the launch date of the Nintendo 64 was because of the internet. You know, reading sites like N64.com. You know, it actually allowed. It was like the start of the hype train. The whole concept of the hype train, because before I never knew the launch date for any consoles.
And the N64 HQ, which was the site that Billy wrote for before he started our site, and that was a legendary sort of underground fan site. Maybe the first really significant Nintendo fan site, and they were really, really popular. They were more popular than IGN back then. IGN owned. N64.com.
Right.
And they were a big deal. And the only reason they shut down is just because the guy who was running it, a guy named Scott Cap, or Cap Scott, I think, he just decided he couldn't keep up with it. He was in college and he just didn't have time for it anymore. So he just shut the whole thing down. But it was like at the height of its popularity.
Right.
And that site ended up becoming the archetype for what we do.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. It then became, N2000 HQ.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then, that was the original. It was like for one day. That was the name of our site. Really, I think we very quickly switched over to Planet N2000.
Yeah,
because this title's not working.
Well, I remember I was actually supposed to get an N64 at launch, but I remember it was like the Christmas of '96, and I was supposed to be getting an N64, and I was so excited, and I unwrapped the present, and it was a PS1.
Oh,
what a burn!
Well, I mean, in retrospect,
yeah, it's not that bad. I mean, that's the thing. Retrospect was pretty.
If it was a Saturn, then you could probably fall for.
Yeah, yeah. No, if it was a Saturn, I would have tried to get myself like emancipated or something. But
they bought me a Saturn.
But no. It was a PS1, which in retrospect is actually pretty sweet. But at the time, I was crushed because all I wanted to do was play Mario.
Yep. But at least you had video games. I skipped that whole generation. And people in the chat were trying to guess what my system launch was and like Game Boy and stuff like that. But I never was there for the launch of any console, basically, until 3DS. So.
And then the XL when you walked into a store and found one.
Yep, pretty much. And that was the same for the 3DS. No, actually, I ordered it online. So there's no story there. I was like, I showed up at work and it was there. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm going to charge this up when I'm home.
There's some stuff going on in the chat room, and it probably is worth mentioning since I was talking about the N64 HQ and the N2000 HQ that was the original name of our site. There were a couple other pretty big fan sites back in that era that merged with our site, and some of their content came over in their forums, their communities, and their readers. And those were the 64 Source, which was a site run by Justin Nation, who became our amazing programmer, and programmed the purple, and well, it was first it was green and then it came purple.
I was the release date editor for 64 Source.
Do you guys remember?
I
kept track of all of the release dates for it.
Oh my god!
Do you guys remember that? Yeah.
How insufferable!
Do you guys remember the Flash intro? For the old Planet Gaming Flash intro?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Man, I'd like to find a copy of that.
You can still find it on the Wayback Machine.
Ty worked a little bit on N64 HQ, Ty Sugart, who's in the chat right now if you want to ping him on this some old stories. But Ty must have been about 10 years old when he was working at N64 HQ. I think he worked on 64 Source as well after that. And then, the other website that we merged with was Operation N2000, and that was a really big one too.
Was that Rick Powers?
Yeah, that was Rick Powers, who was on. Yeah, so there's a lot of good stories.
Sounds like a Bond villain.
One day when I write my book, all of this will be in there.
Can I just ask a question? I mean, I was on the internet at this point, but I wasn't writing for sites. Did anyone know how the fuck to name a website back then?
It was Planet.
It was the Wild West, man.
Yeah,
the name of your site is blank 2000 or Planet Blank.
Yeah. Or I mean, both, if you want to get them in there.
Yeah, we hit both of those points.
Planet Blank 2000.
Oh, yeah, man. Oh, yeah,
it was very confusing if you wanted to make a website about the year 2000, because then it was Planet 2000, 2000.
I remember was it TGS when they announced the Wii name? Or no, it was right before E3, I remember, yeah. I remember we were waiting for them to unveil the name of what the revolution was going to be, and we were all like on GoDaddy or whatever the hosting provider was to like make sure we got the name.
Yep.
Just in case.
Yep.
Oh, man. I think
we owned Planet Wii for a while. We didn't use it, but I think we did own it.
I think we got.
We already decided we didn't want to.
We would have been such a terrible.
Yeah, we knew that it would be bad. So but I think we did own it. Obviously, the reason we're talking about our first launches is because of Wii U launch coming out now in about almost exactly a week and
wait,
like
what?
7 hours. Yeah. So,
breaking news to Guillaume.
we addressed this a little bit in the very beginning of the telethon with the Wii U hype train, but Do you guys feel the excitement that you did for your first launch? I mean, because this is an important part, I think, of being a sort of a core gamer. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a lot of people who are very, you know, very serious, legitimate, hardcore, whatever term you want to use, but people who are really, really into gaming and have never bought a system on launch day. So I don't think it works in that way, but I think if you do buy a new console on launch day, that's an immediate qualifier. You are really into gaming. And a lot of people have never done that before. A lot of people never buy systems on launch day.
What if you're depressed you're not going to buy a new console on launch day? Is that worse?
I think
it qualifies you, though. The thing is, I think for me, I think part of the launch hype has sort of died down because of how easy it is to buy things online. Like, it used to be, you know, I mean, now you can just, you know, order your Wii U or whatever on Amazon and it shows up at your door magically. But it used to be, you know, it was a big thing, like, oh, I'm, you know, I'm going to get up tomorrow morning, you know, and, you know, I'm going to go to GameStop or whatever, EB Games, and, you know,
stand line overnight.
Yeah, walk in there. I mean, that's the thing. Like, people still stand. You don't have to do that. You only do it if you really want to. If you want to get something at midnight, you know, it used to be, you know, you the only choice you had. I mean, you never even really used to have, you know, the concept of a midnight launch is still relatively new. You know, it used to be, you know, you would just have to go in, you know, at 9 a.m. when the mall opened or, you know, whatever, and you would walk in and you would have your pre-order and you'd give them your ticket and there you go, you'd walk out. But that used to be a big deal, you know. Now you can make it a big deal if you choose to, but it doesn't have to be. It used to have to be a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, I've told this story on the show before, but when I did the Wii pre-order thing, it was weird because the whole line tradition actually moved to the day that GameStop was going to start taking pre-orders rather than the actual day of the system launch. So people were lined up at the GameStop in the mall during, like, mall walkers time of the day. So you just watch people walk by and ask what you're all lined up for. And the answer really is, I'm lined up so I can buy a piece of paper. I'm very excited about this piece of paper.
The thing is, I wonder now if the really hardcore are actually the people that wait in line and are there for the midnight launch. It's kind of separated it a little bit, you know? It's like you kind of choose how hardcore you actually want to be. So that line has kind of moved, I think.
I want to be 62% hardcore.
Speaking of the Wii launch, just really quickly, I want to sort of give a shout-out to a podcast that our own TYP and our old director, Wendy, did at the Wii launch. They recorded an on-site podcast at the Wii launch. I think it would have been in LA. I think they actually talked to one of the Nintendo executives. I'm trying to remember who it was.
They talked to George Harrison.
That's right. Yeah, they did.
He's not with the company anymore, but it was pretty awesome. That was a really great podcast. That was back in the really early days of Radio Free Nintendo. Mm-hmm. And I heard that and I thought, I hope we do this kind of thing all the time. And I don't think we ever did it again after that. But it was really cool.
Can you imagine a Nintendo exec just standing around to be interviewed at a Wii U console launch?
Not now.
Seriously.
No.
You'd be tackled by a PR rep if you came within 30 feet.
All right, we should probably move on because Darkerai is saying that we've said all this stuff before on other episodes of the podcast. But I did want to mention that Flash intro that we brought up earlier.
That's awesome.
Ty Sugar made that, and he found a link. He found a copy of it, put it on NWR, and put a link in the chat room. I just tweeted it as well. So you guys have to go see this. It is the craziest, most epic thing you've ever seen. It's amazing.
I don't know why, but
did he find it, or did it just get carried over all the times we've migrated? I think it did.
It may very well be still on there from the original version.
I think it's just been migrating like it's the Great Sea Traveler. I mean,
oh man! But yeah, we should probably move on, Carl. So, what else did you have up for shenanigans?
Well, we're actually going to be getting a caller in here in a second. While that's getting prepared, actually, one more thing I wanted to talk about for console launches. My still the most memorable launch for me, and again, not a Nintendo system, which shows how loyal I am, but will always remain the Dreamcast launch because
they did a lot of pre-advertising.
Oh man, so much. It's probably still going to be my favorite launch of all time because did you guys ever rent systems?
Yes,
I never actually rented systems, but I know people that rented them and then stole
this before I had one.
Yeah, we rented a Dreamcast. Like me and my friends from school all like threw in to like rent one for a weekend, and we probably beat like two or three games in that weekend, just like passing the controller off. And that will always remain my favorite sort of launch experience. But all right, so Zach's going to be getting Elord in here in a minute. And he's got a good question, so I'm hoping to get him in here soon. We're currently at the halfway point. And remember, guys, if you want to also if you also want to call in, make sure that you are IMing Zach Kaplan on Skype, and Zach will throw in his Skype ID into the chat as well. Oh, and Carly's telling me not to forget that
the grand prize drawing, right?
Yeah. James, do you want to take care of that real quick?
I don't have the winners in front of me.
Okay, hold on. I think Carly.
By the way, Zach's Skype name is zack.kaplan97. So if you're not in the IRC chat, you can use that to get a hold of him and queue up for a question here. But the prize winners from Carmine's very special giveaway here. Let me scroll up to it. Oh boy, where the heck did it go? Prize winner. In the wrong room.
Hey, hello. Hey, we've got you on the line, man. But go ahead and mute your feed for a minute. The stream.
Okay.
Thanks.
So, courtesy of Carly here, the winners for the special prizes are as follows. And again, if you're not listening right now, that's okay. If you hear this on the recording later or whatever, it's fine. You don't have to be present to win. And by the way, we will contact you. We already have your email address because you had to email to enter the sweepstakes.
That's how it works.
You don't have to do anything. We'll get in touch with you and set up the shipping and everything for it. But the winners are, drum roll, for the Golden Nunchuck, the code word was Super Wii, the true name. The winner is Clint H. Clint H., you won a gold nunchuck, which you can play on your Super Wii. It's compatible.
No. It can't be compatible with something that doesn't exist.
For the copy of the limited edition kickstarted game Diamond Trust of London for Nintendo DS, the code word was Kickstarter, and the winner is Paul B. Paul B., you are the winner. We will contact you. Sit tight.
You'll be smuggling diamonds everywhere.
Yeah, for the incredible, I can't believe Carmine gave this away. This is so awesome. The incredible Japanese copy of Hyrule Historia, the amazing 25th anniversary art book for The Legend of Zelda, including the first ever official Nintendo timeline of all the Zelda games. The winner, the code word was Guru Guru, and the winner is Kevin S. Kevin S. won that. I wonder if that's my friend Kevin S. I don't know. Could be. It's a common name. Could be. For the next one, this is a set of two 3DS prepaid $20 eShop cards. The code word was Yoshi Coin, and the winner is Cody B. Cody B., we will get in touch with you, and you are getting hooked up there for the eShop. And finally, for the $20 25th anniversary Zelda points card, this is you can use it on Wii or the DSi. Or DSiWare. This is a really beautiful eShop card. It was a very limited edition special 25th anniversary Zelda points card. And it is still loaded up with points, by the way. We didn't use them. The code word was Pickle Juice. Infamously, Pickle Juice was the code word during the Famicast segment. And the winner is Brian S. We will get in touch with you, Brian S., and you are going to get that prize. So thanks to everybody who entered. I know we had lots of people participating in that sweepstakes, and a very, very special thanks to Carmine for donating those prizes. There was some awesome stuff in there, and I wish I had been eligible.
Indeed.
All right, very awesome cool. Stuff. Thank you very cool. much, guys.
Awesome. So we've got Eloyd here to ask us a question. And Eloyd, what do you got for us?
Hi, yeah. So you guys are talking about launches, and it made me think of something a little less memorable. When did you stop playing a certain console?
Oh, that's a good question.
I have an answer for one.
Go for it, James.
So, N64, 3 days after I got it. Next question.
Oh, come on.
Well, yeah, it's a little bit less memorable. It's not as if we set our consoles on fire right after, you know, the new one launches.
It was... I will say, for the Nintendo consoles, it seems to be about a year before its successor comes out, and it's pretty regular. So, I mean, I would say, like, the last thing I played on my Wii was Pandora's Tower, but I got that relatively late. But it was roughly, you know, 3 to 4 months after that came out in Europe. I mean, that's pretty much the last time I've touched the thing. It's got some dust on it. It's chilling out over there.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on you know, when the new console comes out and what games are kind of still trickling out for the old one, really. So
that's, yeah, like my GBA, it lasted up until the Easter I got the DS. I mean,
because
it just assumed the GBA duties, and the GBA, because it was a launch unit, went with a shitty screen and no backlighting, it went to the shelf. And well, that was the end of that.
A big reason why I'm usually not there for console launches is because I'm usually taking the time to finish off the interesting games in the library. So I will keep on playing a certain system long after the new one has come out. So I'm still playing DS games right now. And of course, it has a lot to do with, the strength of the library, I suppose. Let's just say that GameCube, I stopped playing well before I got a Wii U. But DS had so many games that, you really can't keep up.
Yeah, I mean, that's just sort of... Yeah, it really does depend on the system's health, the viability of the system.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also has to do with how many games did you miss? How many things are you trying to catch up with? Which, now that we're in an age where backwards compatibility is more common, it's not always a given, but most consoles seem to be at least one generation back. And so sometimes one of the things I look forward to, like I have, based on Guillaume's very strong recommendation, I ordered a copy of Prince of Persia for Wii. Yeah. And that's the Forgotten Sands, I should say, for Wii. And I haven't played it yet, partly because I haven't had time because of this telethon. But but also with Wii U coming out in a week, I figured maybe I'll just play it on the Wii U and kind of get a feel for that. I mean, it's probably not going to be a very interesting experience. It'll probably be exactly like playing it on Wii. But, it'll be kind of a nice little test case for it. So, that has a lot to do with it as well. I definitely played some GameCube games on my Wii, especially in the early days, and a few times later than that on Retroactive. And it had been years since I'd hooked up a GameCube to do anything, but then even just last week, I hooked up the Game Boy Player to play some Final Fantasy on it. So
I was laughing about that when I saw that picture on Twitter, because you were saying that you were not going to hook it up.
Yeah, and like one day later, I broke down, and I was so curious to see what it would look like after all these years.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's. I think that the DS is an interesting case because there's still a decent trickle of games coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, on the GameCube, you'd be hard pressed to have games you missed, considering the rate games came out at towards the end.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I think sort of when I a little while after I got my DS is when I stopped playing my GBA. I think the last GBA game I played was that, it was that platformer from Game Freak, Drill Dozer.
Yeah, that was a late one.
Yeah, that was I think that actually came out after the DS came out.
Yeah, was one of the last major games, yep.
Yeah, that game was good.
Mm-hmm.
They really need to make another one of those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say probably the one that I dropped the quickest was Game Boy Advance, probably.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's because it's totally duplicated by the DS functionality.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah.
So that had a lot to do with it.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much, Elliot. I appreciate you calling in, man. And I know you've been on a little early, so I'm guessing you've been listening almost all day.
Pretty much. I mean, I'm with my family right now. It's my birthday coming up, so I just put it on in the background.
All right. Well, we appreciate it, man. Have a good one.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. Have a great podcast.
Right. Awesome.
Thank you.
All right, so we're going to be getting Darkerai back in here. He's been on here before, too.
By the way, just a quick update. I know some people are freaking out because the donation number went way, way up. That's because the giant donation that we had earlier that we were correcting for finally came through on chip-in, and so now it's being double counted. So we're actually at about 6,200, which is still fantastic. But just before you think, somebody came in there and went really, really, really crazy. That's the situation there. So we're going to get that fixed on chip-in. I wasn't sure whether it would ever come through while we were still on the air. And because it affects, what gets unlocked and it affects the stretch goals and everything, I wanted to make sure that we got that represented. But they just caught up on chip-in and they just added it back into the real real total. And so we're going to have to go back and take out our little correction there. So the real total right now is 6,278. And that is really fantastic, guys. So thank you very much.
Unless somebody wants to drop another $1,500.
Yeah, please go for it. It all goes to a good, look, it all goes to a good cause, guys. Like, there's not, it's not like Child's Play ever is going to, like, be like, no, no, we've got enough money.
Yeah.
You know what, kids? You've got enough toys.
Yeah, exactly. But, all right, well, we've got Darkrai in here.
Hi.
How's it going, man?
Hey.
So, what would you like to talk about, man?
I had it written down. Hold on, let me pull that up. So, as a couple of you noticed, I'm sure, over this summer, I was doing a binge of the podcast's entire history.
I remember that, yeah.
You are yes. There were some disturbing tweets that came out of that.
Yeah.
I still haven't totally finished that. As soon as I get some free time, I'm back in school now. I'm going to get back to that as soon as I can. But, so, you know, while I was listening to it, I had, you know, I got to really hear a lot of what you had to say, both, you know, from the modern times of the game industry and like what it was like 6 years ago. So, and like, you know, I got to hear a lot of, you know, everything that you guys said, and it made me really think about the industry differently. And, you know, it's a bit cliche to say, but, you know, you kind of inspired me a bit. And, you know, both the things that you've had to say about the industry and the things that, you know, just the production of the podcast, has made me think very carefully about how to make stuff in my own projects. And, you know, now we're thinking about, you know, today you raised over $6,000 for charity. It's like, you guys, you know, this is a lot more than just a podcast or a Nintendo fan site now. It's like, have you ever really thought about, like, you know, what your greater role is in here? Like, you know, is this just a podcast to you guys? Or is this, like, I know obviously there's a lot of commitment to it, but do you ever really feel like, you know, individually it's meant a lot to me, and certainly that $6,000 is going to mean a lot to Child's Play. So, like, you know.
I mean, I've often thought of myself as a golden god. And so...
Oh, God. It's shenanigans, not bold-faced lies.
Yeah, no. I mean, honestly, I feel like if you go into something like that with that mindset, you're probably not going to make a very good show.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead, James.
I was going to say, so E3 2010, I guess? 11? Not sure. It was one of the ones that 3DS was at. And when I got recognized playing that god-awful Ace Combat demo they had on the 3DS, just otherworldly horrible demo.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody walked up and just prompted and asked me if I was who they thought I was correctly.
Oh, God.
Even though I had already...
And the thing is, it wasn't a cop.
No, it wasn't a cop either. It's always good when someone who comes up and asks, are you your name? And they're not in uniform. Because if they're in uniform, the answer is no. But, I mean, we'd already done live shows. We'd already done, you know, PAX a couple times at that point. I mean, we had met people who you know the show. But having someone come up and just, A, see you... And because he couldn't have read my name tag, I don't think, and then B, immediately assumed because of the game I was playing who I was. It was kind of unsettling, and yet kind of a weird and humbling experience. You know, as when you write for the site and you get comments on things you write, that can always, even if it's just some, you know, rather pedantic blog post you've written. Wow, what the hell was that?
Just entered an air carrier for a minute there.
it's just...
Ace Combat is coming to the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Someone just revved up the jet.
It can be kind of a weird experience, but doing the show, you know, week in, week out, is always kind of it's kind of humbling that people want to listen to it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. I know, like, the way we drone for hours and we talk about the same shit over and over again, and we talk out of our ass every single week. I'm really amazed that as many people listen to it as they do.
And I made a point to go back and listen to all of them.
I know! That was the most stunning part! Like,
that's amazing. I remember I was I caught a few of those tweets, and I was just like, man, this dude has dedication.
It's more like I had a job where they let me listen to my iPod over the summer.
All right, well, there's that too, I guess.
I mean, stuff like that. Like, when I was getting tweets from you about random episodes, and I was just thinking of things that happened, that was the kind of stuff that I consider really humbling about this.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
you know, that people actually, you know, care about, you know, like week to week, like, oh man, I can't wait for the podcast. It still blows my mind to this day.
Even when you get called out on bullshit that you predicted 3 years ago, it's like, well, yeah, I did say that.
Yep.
Did you find that we were like, we do a lot of predictions on the show. I think those are really fun to look back at later on.
Except for one of them.
Well, did you find in general that we are pretty accurate about that stuff? I mean, do you think, and even like maybe not even the predictions, but even the analysis and the way we interpret certain things going on in the industry over time? Do you think that we're Do you get the feeling over time that we know what we're talking about, or do you think we're pretty full of shit?
Well, you certainly know more than the podcast that I work with, but just don't tell anyone I said that. but you guys definitely know a lot about what you're saying. You know, it's I come to trust a lot of what you're saying, and you know, it's definitely a great look into, like, you know, how things were back then, just listening to old episodes, because I was like, you know, 12 or 13 when the show started. So I was hardly on the internet at all. I didn't really know what was going on. So, like, you know, I can hear a lot about, you know, how it really was back then, you know, from the perspective of someone that, you know, is, you know, more mature and knows what they're talking about, as opposed to how I remember it from 12 years old. Like, the weirdest part of, like, going back and listening to older episodes is just how I remember these buzzwords that just keep coming up. Like, when we got into, like, 2008, I started hearing the word storage solution a lot.
Clean out the fridge.
That's what you put your contact lenses into every night.
But I actually do have one recognition story that I've never told on the show. I think I actually told it on an episode of Box Office Poison a while back, but I've never told it on Radio for Nintendo or any other NWR podcast. It was in the early days of RFN, where the show did not have nearly as many listeners as it does now, and was a very, very different show. And I was in a GameStop buying a video game, and a guy, because you know how I think when you trade in used games, like, the guy takes down your ID and whatever, so, like, he says your name aloud and all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And a guy behind me says, "Are you that guy who writes for Planet GameCube?"
And man, you must have looked at him like he was from another planet.
I did. I was like, "What do you know about Planet GameCube?"
Yeah. What do you know about that?
No, me. You don't know anything about my life.
what do you know about the things I've done? And
is like the history of violence.
Well, we're all gonna know about the things you've done in about 15 minutes. So.
And the funniest thing is he had me sign his DS.
Wow.
And I shit you not. And it was maybe the third most awkward thing I've ever been involved in.
Number one is two.
I'm really glad, though, that you still remember me after all these years.
Well played, sir.
So, Carl, are they about to learn about number one or number two in about 12 minutes?
We're going to get number one, but number two has been on Crosstalk for ages, so...
Oh, okay.
I don't need to say what that is. All right, so I think... all right, well, any other thoughts on Darkrai's question?
I'm new.
The telethon is probably the single most important thing that we do all year, and it's probably the most difficult thing to put together, and it's my favorite day of the year, and I'm so proud of it. But I think the most tangible result of what we do is the PAX East panel, and I know a lot of people would like to come to that and they can't, you know, and it's really kind of a limited access thing, unfortunately, and I wish we could do it multiple times throughout the year. I wish we could go to every different convention and have panels and stuff like that. But, you know, what we do is very, even in this case, you know, we do have these live calls and we have this interaction in the chat room and on Twitter and the forums and everything. It still feels kind of removed. And I was telling, like, the Nintendo Free Radio guys, they were getting really nervous about the show. And I said, just remember, I mean, once you start the segment, it's really just you talking amongst yourselves. I mean, all those other people kind of melt into the background a little bit. And it's easy to focus on the other people's voices. But when you go into the front of a big conference room and there's like 100 there, that is a really humbling, terrifying experience. Mm-hmm. And to see those people in person and to find that they would not only, I mean, you can listen to podcasts while you're at work or while you mow the grass or while you do whatever, but to see people spend money to come to PAX East and then spend part of their time at that show to come listen to us and to come interact with us is really amazing. And like I said, I wish more people could be involved with that, but that is one of the coolest things that I've ever gotten to do. So that's the big one for me.
Yeah, and that people, you know, come up to you and they say, hey, you know, like they thank you. They're like, hey, you know, thank you for doing your show. I really enjoy it. And the fact that they would like actually take the time to come to PAX East and come up to you in person to thank you is just really incredible. It makes you feel really good, you know? And I don't think you – when you just sit here doing the podcast week to week, it's like you don't really understand, I think, the reach that you have. And one thing I've kind of learned over the years is that we're sort of I feel like we're sort of a voice for people that kind of – that maybe don't have other friends that are as into Nintendo as they are, you know? Like I know that there's kind of people out there that, you know – the dark.
That's what you're saying, John.
Kind of, for the disenfranchised.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's cool. You know, I'm really glad that we can be that. Like, you know, that people are out there that are like, hey, you know, this is a podcast that, you know, I can hear them talk about stuff that I probably couldn't talk to anybody else about because they're just not interested in it.
They get us, and we get them. Like, right.
And that's what PAX is all about. So that's why it's a really a perfect marriage, you know, between what we do and what they do.
I would say that if you do come to PAX – and I say this to everyone if they're going to be attending a panel for RFN or Connectivity or any of the NWR shows, come up afterwards and hang out because I think, I mean, at least the two times that I've gone to PAX to hang out with the guys, afterwards we all go get lunch and you can come along.
Yeah.
Each time we've gone, we've taken a group of people from the show who just come up to us afterwards and we all go out to lunch.
Yep.
So we are not that removed from the audience. We're not that famous.
This may not apply really. If they stick us.
We're famous to like 20 people.
Yeah, exactly.
We're pretty damn approachable.
Lunch invites may not apply if they slot us at like the 9:30 p.m. hole.
Well, if that's
let's go to lunch,
case,
guys.
If that's the case, we might need to go get food afterwards for the hangover cure.
Oh. Yeah, really. Hey, Darkerite, thank you so much, man. I really appreciate your comments and I appreciate you being involved in the telethon.
Yeah, thanks absolutely, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, this has been like the craziest 2 weeks of my life, and talking to all five of you didn't make it any less crazy. So,
well, thank you, man.
Thanks for coming on, man.
Right, so, thank you very much.
On to the next listener call in here. It might be the last one.
We can run long.
That's going to be Daniel.
Daniel, who I just called, but I can't get him in here for some reason.
We have some time. So, Johnny, do you remember what we talked about? You, myself, and John were talking about before the first PAX show, as we were staring out on the podium at all these empty seats, getting our people to come in.
I thought we might have five people there.
Well, that was true. We did have that conversation, but there was. I think we went through like two to three just things of water, just constantly just pounding down.
Mm-hmm.
We were just so stressed out.
And then I had to piss the entire time we were on the panel. Which was really just a nice compliment to the general feeling of nervousness and anxiety that I had the entire time.
It's barely – three years in, it's barely gotten any easier. But that first
doing
year,
it live, that's a different beast. It's really
– that first year, we were nervous wrecks.
We really thought that no one was going to show. And luckily, we got a pretty decent crowd. I do also remember that they gave me two of those little boxes with your name on it, so Mike had to be Carl Castaneda number two.
Yeah, I mean, that first time there was a lot at stake because, you know, like we wanted, of course, we were worried about how we were going to do, how we were going to interact, and we were also worried about how much of a crowd we would have because, you know, that means, you know, what are people going to hear about it, about the panel? Are we going to have one next year? There was just so much at stake, and even now it's kind of the same thing. We're like, you know, I think in the back of our minds we're all still like, you know, is this going to be a success? Are we going to be able to come back next year? You know, so, yep.
Yeah, it was wise.
I'm adding Daniel right now.
Okay, so we got Daniel in.
Hello?
Hey.
Hey! Hey!
How are you?
Hey. Doing fine.
So what's up, man?
Nothing much. I have a question for you guys.
All right.
So recently I've been playing
the greatest GameCube game of all time, Battalion Wars, and thinking to myself, what's your guys' favorite second-tier Nintendo games? Like, games like no one's ever heard of from Nintendo.
Well, favorite. No one's ever heard of? That would be, like, fourth tier, but...
yeah, like...
Well, the main doesn't necessarily get mainstream. Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Sort of an obscure Nintendo title that we all
know. So we know Carl loves Battalion Wars Wii. Loves it.
Yeah, that's one of those that they're one of two games that I never reviewed, even though I have the review copy.
Mine would be Spiderwick Chronicles, probably.
No. No, the thing was, they were both high profile games. It was Battalion Wars Wii and Fire Emblem.
Like, yep. You bastard! You just hate intelligence systems, don't you?
Yeah. No,
I think I spent a good year trying to get you to actually review those, Carl.
And I kept making promises and I kept breaking it. But I'll say, before this podcast goes live, I will have reviews on that site.
Oh, my God.
I'm going to hold him to that.
Don't hold your breath for that one.
I'm going to give my answer right away before someone else takes it. Chibi Robo.
Oh, ooh. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
You and,
I won this question.
Disagree.
Yeah, you and Evan Birchfield are big evangelists for that game.
I didn't know they had robots and plug sockets out in the woods of the mountains.
You'd be surprised.
I really love Chibi Robo. I mean, it's not one of my favorite games ever, but that game is so much more than you would expect it to be. I guess that's probably the best way of putting it.
Well, you really get to know these characters that you interact with, and sure, the gameplay is pretty repetitive, but it doesn't really matter. Like, just the story progression, you want to see what's going to happen next. And there's kind of an addictiveness to doing these tasks over and over again. Like, it's really no worse than combat in, like, a Zelda game, really. You know, like, it's there, and you do it, and it passes the time, and it's, you know, you're on your way to your next goal, and I don't know, like, I don't think that the comparison with Zelda is too much of a stretch, you know, like, there's kind of dungeons, you know, like, you're kind of going from dungeon to dungeon, trying to advance the story, and I don't know, it's really, really good. It's been a while since I played it, though, so I can't really talk about it all that much. Mm-hmm. But people need to play that game. I was so sad when the new Play Controls version didn't come out over here. Did it even end up getting made? Like, is it available in Japan?
It's out in Japan. Maybe Europe, but definitely out in Japan.
Mm.
So you could import it.
Well, no, I don't need it. I've got...
He was hoping other people would be given the chance.
Yeah. Well, you know, if we ever get GameCube games on the Wii U Virtual Console, which I think is a strong possibility, then Chibi Robo is definitely one of those games that, like, was really overlooked back in its day. But, you know, once it becomes really easy to get and really cheap to get a copy of it digitally, I think that's the perfect game for that kind of a system. You know, for those of us who are really interested in going back and mining the past and playing those games that we missed back in the first place, Chibi Robo is so good and was, you know, not even that common back when it first came out. That's a really good choice.
Someone from the chat said Odama, which is ridiculous.
You are a genius and a gentleman and a soldier. And a professional drummer.
Odama is such a weird game.
How sad is it that Odama had the microphone control removed? Because that would have just... Because if you had to play it with only the bongos and the microphone, that would have been just...
Did they remove both?
Just the microphone part.
I thought the final game did have the microphone.
Oh, did it not have the bongos then?
I think maybe they took out the bongo support, yeah.
Yeah, it had the mic. It came with the microphone. At least one version of it did.
With the microphone.
Well, it came in both versions because if you already had Mario Party 7, you could use the microphone from that.
Because there's a huge crossover audience between Japanese military pinball simulations and party games.
Yeah, but they I remember when we saw the Odama at E3, the demo kiosk for it was so bizarre because they had bongos hooked up to the stations, and I think this was the same year that Jungle Beat came out. So it wasn't the only game using bongos, but it was so bizarre, and they actually had the microphone kind of clipped to the bongos, and it was, oh man, it was. Oh yeah,
they had built a custom clip for it. Yeah.
Yeah, totally didn't work. I mean, we're all playing this like, what the hell is going on? And it really didn't function all that well.
Saito is a genius. And a psychopath.
Well, yeah, just
maybe in that order.
Real quick, I want to say, because I'm a man of my word, we're about to hit 9 o'clock, and I said at 9 o'clock I would put the URL in for the Red Velvet podcast, and I'm doing that right now.
Oh, God.
Snap.
It's in the chat. It's in the wild, folks. I can't take it back now.
Oh, I'm staying away from that.
It's out there.
Can't take it back now. So it's out there in the wild in the chat, and for those of you who are listening to this as a podcast, I'm sure I'll put it in the talkback thread on the forum or whatever. But to answer the question, though, about
save copy of this file from that link before Carl goes back and changes his mind.
Yes. It's there. It's out. but can't take it back now. So it's done. It's
but we're going to keep talking. We're going to run over our time here to mm-hmm. make you guys wait to listen to the Red Velvet story.
If you only want to hear the Red Velvet story, it happens in the last 20 minutes.
There's a lot of other good stuff before that.
Correct. Yes, there's plenty of other things to listen to, and I implore you to listen to it all. But that, if you only want to hear that, it's at the last 20.
Now, the rest of it, though, is the original podcast, right?
Yes.
Yeah, there's some somewhat relevant game talk, I think, but it's mostly just kind of bullshit. Carl, was this the night that John fell off the bed?
No, that was the original. That was the original drunk cast.
That was the year before. That was when I was trying to beat
Infinite
Space.
That story is apocryphal at best.
Bullshit, Lindemann, because I stand up in the middle of the podcast and go, John just fell off the bed!
I mean...
And then...
That
and
has
then,
been lost to the mist of the past. And then
Obi tries to set the hotel on fire. Yes. Yeah.
That podcast has Johnny telling a story of firing Tim Rogers. That story has us speaking French-Canadian.
I don't even remember what's on that podcast. I disavow everything.
Yeah.
I think I was blacked out for that entire podcast.
No, what? Drunk. This might be the last episode of RFN that I edit, depending on the results, if I like what I hear.
Well,
Johnny,
I'm reasonably
Johnny
certain.
Johnny his love for Kvok.
that's when he was trying to teach us how to drink vodka, right? Right?
No, vodka.
Oh, that was the year before.
That was the year before.
John can't even remember what happened. He's just mixing years now.
I don't know, man. Hey, it's like just it's all hotel and drunkenness.
Look,
and
I separate the two by this. One was the noise complaint year. One was the year that we almost burned the hotel down.
Yeah,
take your pick.
It all merges together for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's not overlook Daniel's question.
I do have an answer for the question. I already sort of mentioned Drill Dozer, but the other game I want to mention, it's not super obscure, but it kind of got passed over. Not many people talked about it when it came out. WarioWare Twisted.
Yes. Ooh,
good choice.
Yes.
That's a good one.
Because it came out around the same time as Touched, and Touched sucks.
Yep.
And Twisted.
They came out at exactly the same time.
No, they came out about 2 weeks later.
Yeah, it was like a few weeks apart, and Twisted is such a better game, but it's on the GBA, so no one really played it.
I mean, I wouldn't say Touched sucks, but I would say Twisted is massively better.
It's so much better than Touched, yeah.
I would say the WarioWare DSiWare game sucks.
Mm-hmm.
That game is a travesty, but but Twisted is amazing. And actually, there was some interesting stuff where if you plug Twisted into the DS while you had Touched in there, it unlocked a bunch of stuff, which was cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you've bought both of our things.
Exactly.
Here's some free electronic content. I would say for me, I know this isn't super obscure, but I was thinking Twisted, so I got to come up with something else. The Wii Punch-Out game. It got some coverage when it came out, but it more or less just sort of faded into obscurity pretty quickly.
It got a lot of coverage on our site.
On our site, it got a lot, but I mean, in general, it wasn't like a superly publicized game.
Right.
And I really enjoy it. The second mode you unlock after you beat the game one time through is brutally, unfairly hard. But it is awesome. Unless you're mm-hmm. Greg, who beat it, because that's what he does.
And, like, it had the challenges that actually taught you how to fight each boxer. I mean, like, you could make it through them once, but these challenges had you learn every little trick, and they were really useful, actually, for trying to beat them a second time. You know, the second time around when they were tougher.
Yeah, so Negative Zero in the chat is throwing out some really good ones here with the Fluidity and Art Style Orbient, and those are both very close to my heart, and I would definitely champion those, and I have. But for me, probably the best game that most people have never played, most people even listening to this have probably never played, Donkey Kong Jungle Beat. And I think that game is absolutely, I mean, I know what you're thinking, man, I have to go out and like find some bongos for it or something. Do it.
It's worth it.
It's absolutely worth it. It is really an incredible game. If you love Super Mario Galaxy, if you love Super Mario 3D Land, you really owe it to yourself to go back and play Jungle Beat. It's made by the same people, and it has the same joy and genius built into it. So
yeah, it's on my pile of shame. Actually, I have that with the bongos. I've never opened it.
It's got bongos
taken out of the box.
It takes an hour there to play through, seriously.
Yeah. It is an incredible game. Yeah, it's not super long. It's more of a little bit more of a score attack game. You can unlock some extra levels if you score really well, but the game is just absolutely charming and really clever, and there's really nothing else like it. I mean, there are other rhythm-based platformers, but I don't think any of them really pull it off. It's certainly nothing like Bit Trip Runner, for instance. It's not that you're playing the game to the music. It's that you need to play the game rhythmically, and the more rhythmically you play it, the better you'll do. But you're not trying to match up to a song. It's a little hard to explain, and you might not even realize what it's doing when you first play it. It takes a little while before everything starts to click together, but when it does, the game really will blow your mind. There's just some absolutely incredible stuff in there.
Oh God, Aaron, what have you done? Aaron has permanently hosted the unedited PAX cast on our site now.
It's about bandwidth, man. You know,
it's about
you have to have the bandwidth to meet demand.
I actually kind of appreciate that because I was a little worried about my bandwidth getting blown up.
Yeah, I was worried about that too.
To this thing becoming the most downloaded thing from Crosstalk ever. It's too bad. Now we're gonna split the user base, and that probably won't happen.
Nice. Just quickly to kind of add my two cents there into the question. There's a couple of games way back on the Game Boy Advance that I always liked, and those Racing Gears Advance and of course Scourge Hive. I think I've probably brought it up before. They're both a couple of really good games by Orbital Media, which is now defunct, kind of just disappeared off the face of the earth. But a couple of really good games for Game Boy Advance if you can find those GBA lying around.
Do you think Racing Gears Advance is better or worse than Carnage?
it's better only because it doesn't have a fucking terrible pun.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Carnage,
by the way,
is super fun. I had a copy of it at one point. I don't know where the hell it is now, but
this is my memo to game devs: if your game has a pun in it, I'm taking half a point off the score.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
It'll get an 8.5 out of me instead of a 9.
It'll get a 5 out of me instead of a 9.
If we were including third parties in the question, I guess Demon's Crest, I would have to say.
Yeah, John missed that part of the question.
Yeah.
That's fine.
First party, I don't know. It's tough.
Well, like, the thing is, like, when you're asking people, like, a game that no one knows, there's a limited number of those.
Yeah, you'd be eventually best to find.
Yeah, especially if you're dealing with Nintendo fans who'd come to a Nintendo enthusiast website and listen to 9 hours of Nintendo enthusiast podcasting.
Yeah.
Because you've split that market down as tight as it gets.
Yeah, you really got to dig deep to find a Nintendo published game. I guess one of the Nintendo published games, something way deep down in the backlog. I guess not too far down in my backlog, but
I don't want to know about that. I don't want to know about your backlog.
So John, I have to say there are a lot of requests for Lindy Rap. Now, as much as it pains me,
well, I'm one of the hottest MCs on the streets. You know that, right?
Shut the hell up!
I got a lot of buzz.
Hey, before we do, let's thank Daniel and say goodbye to Daniel.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Thanks, man. Thanks for participating.
Wait, I have one more thing to say.
Oh, yeah. Sure?
You forgot one game. That I'm very disappointed. The sequel to a swimming game called Endless Ocean 2. Come on, guys.
I thought about that. So
it's
I was
really good.
I was looking at my collection going Endless Ocean or Punch-Out. And you're right, it is a really cool game.
Blue Forever.
Oh shit, someone from the chat just said Hotel Dusk. It's Hotel Dusk. That's my favorite obscure Nintendo game.
Oh yeah, really?
Oh yeah,
that's a very divisive game. Very
divisive. I love Hotel. It's an adventure game starring Evan Birchfield. How could I not like it?
Because it's an adventure game starring Evan Birchfield.
I would play that every day if I could.
I guess it depends on your definition of adventure.
it's more like a, it's more like running errands.
Depends on your definition of Evan Birchfield.
Also, yeah, also Elite Beat Agent. That's the only game I ever gave a 10 to on the site.
Oh, EBA is fucking awesome. Yeah. That's a good choice too. There's so many to pick from. Well, thanks, Daniel. Really appreciate it, man. Talk to you later.
Thanks, man.
Thanks.
Alrighty. So, okay, are we doing the Lindy rap? Is that happening?
Ooh, spit hot fire.
Oh dear.
Somebody turn my mic up.
So I'm gonna have to include the picture of John's Lego in the talkback. In retrospect, that should have been a prize.
But... Yeah, see the thing is with this particular selection, this one's gonna be a challenge. This is one that Johnny dropped to me.
This comes from Nick Bray, who was on RFN last week, and this was his idea, his personal request, and he supplied the materials for it.
This is what happens when you miss a bunch of episodes, John. Mm. We start letting Australians on the show, and they go all crazy.
This one's definitely been planned and executed quite well by you guys, I must say. All in the name of charity.
So, John, why don't you reveal what your newest hit on the street is?
The newest hit on the street, this is going to be my take on the Pokemon rap.
Gotta
catch them all rap.
It
systematically breaks down for the people on the streets all 150 Pokemon, I'm assuming from the first game. I'm not too sure of the okay. So this is all it's an intoxicating blend of raw lyrical fire and singing, you know, melodic singing that I think the people are really going to appreciate. You know, I think it extends my range a little bit.
You know? It really shows what you could do outside the box.
Yeah.
You know, my softer side is, you know, a little, you know, it's kind of like the hard side with the smooth side. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So let me just find the lyrics here.
Some would say it's an erotic melody.
Now, do we have the capability to play the music for John?
I don't know.
I don't know if we can.
Yeah, I wasn't sent an instrumental. I was just sent the lyrics for inspiration.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we would need the instrumental probably to do that.
If anything, maybe I can find a way to put it into the podcast version in post.
Oh yeah, yeah, we can do that.
All right, let me see here. So, all right, I mean, it's going to be kind of strange without the music going.
Do this a cappella? Can you handle this?
I can handle it a cappella, but I'm just worried that it probably won't be on time with the instrumental.
Hold on. If we have a minute, I may be able to pull this off.
Yeah, if you could.
Do we want to mess around a little bit and see if I can do
this? Yeah, let's kill time.
Anything to delay this, really.
Okay, hold on. I'm just gonna drop off for a second here. I'm gonna play this. I'm just gonna, like, you know, kind of get in the zone.
Get into your headspace, you know.
Yeah.
Do we have the audio, please, so that I may try to?
Someone put it into the chat. Hold on, one sec.
Incorporate it into the grander scheme that is just horribleness.
Okay, yeah, there it is from the chat. Jared's got it in here. Okay. Let me just say, I've been looking forward to this since the early days. When we did DK rap, I knew it was only a matter of time. So I came here and started spitting it, Poke style.
Ed. Yeah, we even found the instrumental. Thank you guys for looking that up.
Why is there an instrumental of this?
So that people can freestyle over it, James. That's why you do instrumental rap songs.
Is this wildly in demand in the karaoke bars?
I'm positive. That there's a karaoke bar in LA that has this.
Didn't we see this at PAX East and in that bowling alley bar once? We saw a bunch of people come in and do this at karaoke.
Maybe.
Or did they just sing the Pokemon theme song? Maybe that's what they did.
I don't know. I know I've seen people sing it in the hallway at PAX. just people who spring out into an acapella version of the Pokemon song, but I don't think I've actually ever heard someone do it in karaoke.
Good.
So, James, do you think you'll be able to play this over the call?
I am trying right now.
Okay, so I'll fill time while you set that up and while John gets ready. We can probably make this the poker wrap the grand finale of the telethon. Mm-hmm. And
oh, it's grand.
Out. Yes.
Yeah. The ultimate grand finale. So I just wanted to take a minute to send some thank yous around. This this thing has been really incredible. We've been on the air now for over 9 hours, and some of you have been listening the entire time, which is pretty incredible that you would give up your whole day to listen to our bullshit for this long. but it takes a really huge number of people to come together to pull this off. I mean, we've got about 25 to 30 people on the Nintendo World staff who have put a lot of time into preparing for this, a lot of stress and energy, and have given up their Saturday to pull this off, and really a lot of time even before that getting ready. So I want to thank everybody who has been a support assistant, has been on a segment, has helped host a segment, has helped with the technical stuff behind the scenes. You guys just, you don't even know how much work goes into making this work on the recording, on the audio streaming, on getting the chat room set up, on setting up the donations and getting all that stuff working. It's really a ton of time. Some people donated prizes. It's really a ton of input, and I just want to thank everybody for doing that. I want to thank all special guests. We had a lot this year. We had a lot of awesome people, and it was really kind of a treat for me to get to have some of these people be on the podcast before, including some people we've never had on before, and these people are my heroes. They're people I've wanted to talk to about Nintendo for years and years, and to have them come on our show and be a part of this really special event, it really means the world to me. I want to thank all the people on Twitter and Facebook who and all GAF, geez, there's a great GAF official thread that Goldsman set up. I want to thank Shaman, also known as Ondor, who you heard back on the NFR segment, but he also runs our official NeoGAF thread for Radio Free Nintendo and has helped a lot in promoting that show and promoting this telethon, and there's a lot of work that goes into that as well. I want to thank all the people on Twitter who helped promote this thing and help spread the word. I think that's a big reason that we've had so much success today, getting the word out, getting people in who don't normally come to our website, who don't normally listen to our podcast. That's really important for making sure that we you know, meet and exceed these goals that get ever higher every year. And you know, we really want to make this an event that that the entire internet can feel part of. And it takes a lot of help to get that word out there. You know, we operate in our own little kind of small world, our little microcosm of Nintendo fandom. So being able to work with people and get help from people to spread the word outside of that microcosm and get more people involved, it proves that there are more people who are interested in hearing this kind of content, and it proves that there's a lot of generous people out there who want to help a wonderful charity. And then maybe most of all, I want to thank everybody listening, everybody who's been in the chat room all day, everybody who's called in, has participated, because, I mean, this is a live show. It's very live, as you've heard, and a lot of crazy stuff happens. And there's no way that we could develop 9 hours of content that you would want to listen to without your help. So it, making this interactive, getting people to come in, ask us questions, tell us stories, answer trivia questions, guess game music, that is a huge part of why this works. And I really want to thank people who were able to do that. And, of course, everybody who donated. You guys are amazing. We've had now well over 100 people. Gosh, what are we up to now? Almost 150 people who have contributed to this, and we'll probably go over 150 once you have add in some of the people who are going to donate after the telethon's over. Mm-hmm. And that is pretty incredible, and I think it really speaks to what Child's Play is all about, which is bringing gamers together to do something really wonderful that we probably none of us could do on our own. But we're coming together and trying to support a great cause here and making a difference in the lives of some children who really need a boost, some kids who are really having a hard time and really need the help. So hope you'll forgive me for getting a little serious and dour there for a second, but this has been a pretty spectacular day in my life and in the lives of a lot of these guys. And it really does take a tremendous number of people to come together to make something like this happen. And I really appreciate it.
So, and I'd like to thank Johnny and Carl for really organizing this. They really are the ones who roped this all together. So deserve something too.
Pretty damn impressive.
All I want to get out of this, I've already gotten out of it.
Thank you for saying something.
It's very kind. But this reward, this sounds corny, but this award, this event is really its own reward. And anything that would give me excuse to get to talk to guys like Brad and Garnet and, you know, David Ellis and Kynan from, I get to talk to somebody from Retro Studios about Metroid Prime today, and I did it live in front of hundreds of people on the internet. That is, I live a very charmed life, and putting a few hours into organizing something like this is a very small price to pay. And the fact that it helps a really good charity is almost beside the point for me personally, because I would do it anyway if I thought I could trick people into coming and doing this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It really is kind of an amazing experience every time we do this, how generous our listeners are.
Yeah, you sort of have to – I sort of have to make myself every – a couple times during the day say, take a moment to really take it in because this is actually happening. Like, we're actually putting on a 9-hour show that makes thousands of dollars for an amazing charity that's going to actually help people. The fact that we did this today is going to help people.
Yeah. The fact that we did this again today.
Yes, again.
This is the third time we've done this.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
You know, we had our technical setup meeting on Thursday or Wednesday, and I remember just being like, yeah, get through this technical meeting, get back to doing whatever I was doing before then. But it really I can't think of anything else I'd rather be doing right now than what we're doing right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, even with the technical meetings, we're all there until midnight, 2 a.m. to make sure it's all ready to go. Every single one of us will put our lives aside to make sure this works, because beyond the fact that it's a charitable thing and it's all for a good cause, this is like a blast. This is so much fun to do every year. Like, I don't see any reason why I wouldn't do this every year. You know,
Billy wants to know if we're doing 10K next year, by the way.
next year we're doing 50.
What, are you planning on being a gigolo for the next 6 months?
Well, he wasn't planning.
Carl's going to bankroll it personally.
That's pretty optimistic, I think, to get that kind of revenue.
Man. So are we ready on this song?
On the polka rap?
Yes, we are.
Oh, dear. Okay, guys.
I got lyrics.
Well, good. I'm going to go mute, and I'm as far as I'm concerned, I think we should let this play out the whole thing.
I think we
should proverbially drop the mic after this is over and just walk away that was the telethon.
Are we going to be allowed to react while it's going on, or should we all just be silent?
Yeah, we should react to it, definitely.
Okay.
Alrighty, folks. Well, it's been a blast.
Amen.
Crosstalk.com.
Awful.
Best there ever was. To beat all the rest. Yeah, that's my cousin.
Electro, Dingle, Peter, Lemon, Key, Venator, Radita, Zero, Vinci, Seeker, Tucson, Dragonite, Cassidy, Pony Dog, Ron, Polaroid, Butterfree.
Get your Pokemon. Send you across the land. Far and wide. Release from my hand the power that's inside.
Hydrosaur, Primer, Victor Dog, Contact, Avalon, Rhyhorn, Infernal, Wigglytuff.
Catch him, gotta catch him all. Gotta catch him all, Pokemon.
Alright, hold on. It's a little bit of a break. Let the people dance. Zubat, Primate, Mio, Onix, Steel, Rapidash, Magneton, Snorlax, Gengar, Dangela, Spearow, Seal, Gyarados, Slowbro.
Gotta catch him all. Gotta catch him all, Pokemon.
Ooh,
Persian, Terra, Horsey, Latikat, Magnemite, Caterpillar, Pikachu, Ditto, Oyster, Caterpie, Kangaroo, Bulbasaur, Charmander, Golem, Pikachu! At least 150 more to see. To be a Pokemon master is my destiny. Alakazam, Doduo, Venonat, Machoke, Kangaskhan, Hypno, Electabuzz, Flareon, Blastoise, Poliwhirl, Oddish, Drowsy, Raichu, Metaqueen, Bellsprout, Starmie! Woo! We're at the halfway point. Doing great so far. What's all this free stuff? I'm doing all the hard work. Here we go. Metapod, Marowak, Kakua, Fluffery, Dodrio, Seedra, Vileplume, Krabby, Lickitung, Tauros, Weedle, Nidoran, Machop, Shellder, Porygon, Hitmonchan.
Gotta catch them all. Gotta catch them all. Pokemon.
Archino, Jinx, Nidorina, Feedrill, Hunter, Squirtle, Chansey,
Pokemon,
Parasect, Execute, Dugong, Pidgeotto, Lapras, Vulpix, Rhydon.
At least 150 or more to see. To be a Pokemon master is my destiny.
Charmander, Machamp, Pinsir, Koffing, Dugtrio, Golbat, Staryu, Magikarp, Ninetales, Ekans, Omastar, Scyther, Tentacool, Dragonair, Magmar.
Whoa, catch your breath, man. Shake out those lips. It's downhill from here, just 24 more to go.
Now it gets tricky, so listen real good. Sandslash, Hitmonlee, Psyduck, Arcanine, Eevee, Executor, Kabutops, Zapdos, Stratney, Growlithe, Mr. Mime, Cubone, Graveler, Voltorb, Gloom, we're almost home!
Gotta catch them all, gotta catch them all,
yow!
Gotta catch them all, gotta catch them all, gotta catch them all, Pokemon!
Charmeleon, Wartortle, Mewtwo, Tentacruel, Aerodactyl, Omantite, Snowpoke, Pidgey, Arbok, that's all, folks!
Catch 'em, gotta catch 'em all. Ah! Gotta catch 'em all, Pokemon! Catch 'em, gotta catch 'em all. Gotta catch 'em all, Pokemon! Catch 'em, gotta catch 'em all. Gotta catch 'em all, Pokemon!
I'm wow. out.
I am in pain.
Good night, everyone. Tip good your night, waitress. Folks.
Tip your waitress.
Thank you and good night. Good night and good luck.
Peace.